far are you going?
About 30 years.
In this week's episode, we get to review Robotech the movie with special guest Grant the Thief.
So I said, okay, what do you want? And the standard people said,
we want lots of guns, lots of shooting, lots of robots.
I went into a meeting the next day. I acted out the entire film on video. I played the film silent, and I acted out all the parts for about 80 minutes. And when it was over, the lights came up, and Menachem Golan said,
now that is a canon movie.
There's a question lingering within my mind. Could it be my love or was a dream? Why can't I be fed by science? Can't science rescue me? Save my technology. Since it put me in the place I seem to be. Thinking back on what we had.
And I just hit the restart record button, so we're just going to play it off ear. And John will join us eventually whenever his computer works. So, welcome to the Anime of Your... great start. Welcome to the Anime of Yesteryear podcast. I am your host, Dustin. John is coming up shortly when he gets an Apple computer that actually works for once. We have a special guest because we haven't had a guest on in quite a long time. And that is Grant the Thief from Wave Motion Cannon and... Blade Licking Thieves podcast. So, Grant, if you want to plug something, say hey to the kids or whatever, here's your shot.
So, thanks for having me on, Dustin. I really appreciate that. And, you kind of plug the main two things. I'm one of the hosts on Blade Licking Thieves, and I am one of the Wave Motion guys, so I write and I, pod and do all that stuff over there for them, too. Well, you can find all of my articles about crusty old anime anytime you'd like. we pod about, whatever, however, whenever. And I also occasionally do some guest spots on Zimrit, which is Sean O'Mara's site. I'm sure your people are very familiar with that. Got a couple of articles on there. And every now and then I do guest spots on other pods or, whoever will have me. I'm doing some voice work right now a little bit on the side. That's a nice little fun thing. But other than that, that's the main two is my pod and Wave Motion Cannon. So,
well, thanks for wanting to be on our podcast. And
thanks for inviting me. I appreciate it.
We were chewing the fat a few minutes before we hit record, and you've listened to our stuff. So, I'm glad getting some feedback. At least someone's interested. So,
no, I try to listen. Of course, I do this to myself. I listen to everything, and I try to watch everything, and I try to read everything. So I create for myself a backlog everywhere I go. So, of course, like with everything else in my life, I'm behind on your pod, but I do listen.
At least we're getting someone new listening to it. I know that's happening.
I know that struggle.
For me, it's just I'm doing this. I'm not dead yet. I still want to talk about crap. So. Whatever, me and John are just going to keep this old train going, this old rig.
Yeah, you guys are gone, over 5 years now?
It's going to be 5 years coming up beginning of next year, yeah.
That's a big deal, man. That's a big deal.
Yeah, it's staying committed to it, even if you think no one cares.
I don't think people realize how much work it is to do a thing, and to keep doing a thing.
When you get no appreciation from it. And your only way to do it is just I still want to do it, and it's still fun to me. I don't care what people think.
Yeah, and I think, Blade Licking Thieves, I wouldn't call us a successful pod in sort of a grand, the cosmic scheme of things, but we are infinitely more successful. We just celebrate our first year, last week.
Sweet.
And so, we made it, and it was one of those things where our first year was beyond, of course my measure of success was quite low, but beyond what I hoped. And I think a big part of it though is that I listened to a bunch of our old episodes and I was it's just really nice to kind of have this record of time with my friends. Like, I think that's kind of the yeah. nice, almost one of the nicest things about it. Like, I've kind of got this monument to a good friendship and good conversations and stuff that we like to talk about. So that's a really fun element to it that, of course, we would like for people to listen. That sure would be nice, but it's also nice just to kind of have that record.
Yeah. And you always want to be improving your podcast and not try to, like, you know, even it out or get lower in quality later. So, like, and I commend you for staying, for doing it for a year. And against my pride, I think you do a much better job on running that podcast instead of having me and John do it. Because we kind of
I appreciate that.
I mean, we just kind of BS about whatever. It's like, hey, we got cartoons to talk about. Oh, yeah. And then get on a tirade about American politics for an hour. Like, no, John, closing remarks. That's what it's for.
We definitely yak for a long time, but we specifically have, like, no politics, no Star Wars, no, like, we try to stay off, of course, ironically, we're about to talk about Robotech, but we try to stay off Macross because one of my co-hosts and I will talk about that nonstop, whereas the other one has never seen any of it. So we try to avoid topics that we would just go and we would just leave the topic for the day.
My best advice for that would be to, like, dedicate a whole episode and just contain and throw up and puke all of that information into a 6-hour recording just to get it out there. And it's in this contained biohazard, you know, material. And right. it's like, it's there. And if people want to dip into it and get some weird ass disease, that's their risk. But at least you give them warning. Like, this is what it's going to be for 6 hours. Don't come crying to us that we suck.
We might do that one day.
I think it feels better. Now, yeah.
As I was going to say, one of the things that keeps it fresh for us, thankfully, is that we couldn't decide what to pod about. We were like, well, what do we do? Do we do, like, anime or kaiju or whatever? So we just said, really good way of saying just about anything we want.
That's it, all of the above?
Yeah, we just kind of like, let's talk about whatever. So that keeps it, we get into a rut, we can rotate and do something else. So I commend you for, like, sticking to, like, sort of old taku favorites and old anime and obscure stuff.
Yeah.
For 5 years, because, I mean, we can't stick to that for 4 weeks, you know?
I mean, a lot of our stuff is kind of like when movies come out, it's like, well, we got to talk about it because, you know, we're freaking nerds and we love these comic book movies. And
yeah, right. We all do. Right.
But I try to have it more anime-centric because then it's like, okay, it's that time of the year. We are going to mention this stuff, but then we have con reports. And, I mean, we got, like, me and John have been off and on been doing a Takahashi versus Tomino segment. We pick a show from each creator and talk about it and review it. So, like, 2 years ago, John and I spent the whole summer, like, suffering through Gasaraki. And
I got about, I don't remember, I tried a few minutes of Gasaraki, and I was like, maybe later. And later has yet to arrive again.
You want my DVD set in case you just happen to throw yours out in a drunken tirade one evening that you don't remember? Because I'll gladly give it to you.
don't put that evil on me, Ricky Bobby.
All right. So,
yeah, it's.
I was gonna say. Speaking of staying on topic, why do I have you on this show? Oh yeah, Robotech the movie.
Oh, are we talking about, like, a potential movie, like a film that hasn't happened yet, so we can speculate and hope
and hope that it was better than the one that was put out by the Canon Group?
Yeah, can't we do that?
But let me tell you something. What's gonna? Hopefully, they don't miss out on this because every Robotech movie has to have, and I quote from the person that ran Canon Group telling Carl Masick of this, is this got has to have lots of guns, lots of shooting, lots of robots. Now that is a Canon movie.
I mean, you got to know your brand. You got to know what you're about.
That was what Canon was all about, and they stuck to that to the sour end of their career.
Well, we certainly get a quantity of something in Robotech the movie, that is for sure. It is not a short film, and it has many things in it, but...
Yeah, many things that just, like True Harmony Gold Fashion, seem to don't want to mix together, but they tried anyways.
Yeah,
wow. All I can think of is just Carl Masick holding Megazone, which is a circle block, and... you know, Southern Cross, which is a square block, and he's just pounding them together, and he's just going, well, I'll just get some Gorilla Glue and hope for the best.
Right. Yeah, so do we want to try to summarize this for the people?
I didn't know if we wanted to briefly talk about like how you first got into Robotech. Like, what's your background on it? What does it mean to you?
So I came to Robotech. I'm one of those sort of otaku that's I'm too young to be a veteran, really. Like, I wasn't there for the tape trading days, really. I wasn't really there for all that stuff. I mean, I still, you know, got some secondhand tapes from people's older brothers or some stuff at school or whatever. Mm-hmm. You know, we weren't old enough to even know that anime clubs were a thing and that sort of thing. But I'm not a spring chicken. I was born in the Cold War, that kind of thing. So I'm sort of on the cusp. I was way too young to be aware of Robotech when it originally aired in the mid-80s. But when Toonami was replaying it in, I guess, the mid to late 90s, that's when I first kind of came across it. And that was not the first time I'd seen anime. I was becoming aware of anime thanks to things like Saturday Anime or, again, just like, you know, you'd go over to spend the night at a friend's house and they're like, hey, you know, look at this tape that my brother showed me. And you'd be like, okay, let's see. Whoa. And this whole new, you know, suddenly you're watching Ninja Scroll when you're 8 and you're just like, what is going on?
I didn't know snakes can move that way on a woman.
Snakes and people, and it just, what a learning experience it was. But
it's educational.
Here for the rest of your life. But Robotech was something that I saw in Toonami, and I was becoming aware of anime at the time, and it was one of the first kind of long form shows that I had seen, and it really grabbed me. And it was, you know, right from the get go with the Macross saga, and I ate it up. Just kind of everything about it really grabbed me. And, I love the Macross saga, and I enjoyed the Southern Cross saga as well, or Master saga, I guess is what Robotech called it. I never really got into Mospita that much, New Generation. That wasn't quite my jam. I just really liked rewatching Macross, like, a lot. And then of course when DVD started to become more common, I bought the DVD sets, those big blue, light blue boxes, and I just watch those things.
Yeah, I've got a couple of those too. The ones released by ADV.
Mm-hmm. Yep. And they had like, it'd be like two of the, I guess Macross was in like 6 DVDs, but they spread it across 3 boxes, even though they could fit 3. And it was like, it would be like 1 and 2, and then you'd get like, you know, the Sentinels movie, and then like 3 and 4, and then you'd get like a thing full of toy commercials or something.
Yeah. Cause I have a couple of those. Like the third one I have is the, I know the fifth one is the Sentinels, the Robotech, the Sentinels movie.
Right.
And then the third one, ugh, crap, I'm pulling it out now. No, the third one's got the Robotech Sentinels, and I think the fifth one has like the Macross pilot episode, and then I wind up getting...
One of them has some unfinished video game footage too.
Oh, that's John. Hey, John, this is Grant. You two meet each other?
Hey, John. Hey,
hi.
And then I picked up another...
I had to install some updates and restart my computer and take my dog out, and it took a lot longer than I thought it would, but I'm on here.
Yeah, but one of these DVD sets I actually bought last weekend from a bookstore in Greenville has the codename Robotech on it. And
right.
That's like the pilot movie, right?
Is it? I thought there were two separate things.
I don't remember now. I didn't watch a lot of the additional content stuff all that much. I just really enjoyed the Macross saga, and I pretty much, once I got those DVDs, I had enjoyed it on TV, but I had those things on. There's probably 15-month period of my life where I just would have those on in the background all the time. So I really, really enjoyed that. And of course, then when I got to see Macross itself in college, it was around the time, it may have been ADV. Who put out the actual, like, they started to put out the actual Macross series on DVD.
Might have been Anime Ego first.
Yeah, Anime Ego was first, but they put it out around 9/11, which is why it didn't sell so well. And then eventually the rights, I guess the way I understand it is the rights went over to ADV, and then they did it their way and had, like, a Macross dub. And I think they brought, like, Mari Ijima to be the voice of Minmay on the English dub. But then
I think Anime Ego was sub only, right?
Yeah, Anime Ego's been always sub only since like the early 90s because they tried dubs and they're like, nobody likes these, let's just stick to subs and we'll stick to the people who want those subs.
Didn't they record their dubs in South Carolina? Or it was like a very different cast than you would have usually
know
in a dub.
The group was called like Coastal Carolina Dubbing, but it's not related to the college in South Carolina. And I thought it was, but I don't even know if that place still exists. I have no idea.
Probably not.
But I tried to watch that way, but of course the releases were really scattered, and so I ended up a friend provided me other means with which to watch it, and I enjoyed it a lot then, and I just rewatched it again late last year because before Amazon did strike, they just had some anime streaming and they put Macross on there last year. I watched Macross again and I keep falling in love with that story over and over again. So it's probably one of the most important shows I've ever seen, just in terms of kind of one of those formative experiences. It kind of hits all the switches for me. It really, I watched, of course, I love Do You Remember Love, the film as well, but I watched Clash of the Bionoids. I got that from, you know, a local Blockbuster that was clearing some stuff out because I had rented it before, and I was like, well, I guess I'm taking you home with me. And even through that horrible dub, I don't know how many times I watched that movie because I was just struck by just the incredible visuals and some of the set piece battles and these characters that I love so much.
It's a gorgeous film.
Don't you have your copy of Clash of the Bionoids signed at a convention?
Yeah, by Haruhiki Mikimoto. Mikimoto knows it exists now, and that was like 2013 when he was in Animazement last time, and like I had him look at it, and I was like, hey, I want to let you know that this thing exists, and I was telling the translator, and he was like, oh, heck yeah, I'm signing this for you.
But that's pretty great. You've cursed his life by bringing Clash of the Bionoids into it. He lived in this idyllic realm where he didn't know Clash of the Bionoids existed.
Yeah, I had to ruin his livelihood, and then he's going to tell Kawamori, and Kawamori's like, what the f*** did they do to that movie?
Oh, it's like The Ring. You watch it, and then 7 days later, you're dead or something. Yeah. So Robotech and Macross, like that story, I've always, in one way, shape, or form, I come back to it. I bought plenty of the ancillary materials, like I'm also a big tabletop RPG head, so the old Robotech source books from Palladium, as horrible as they were as a game system, it had lots of art and lots of what I assumed was official data, so I was, like, reading those constantly and, like, poring over the details and, you know, that kind of stuff. It was definitely a big part of the fandom.
Isn't there a lot of expansion of the universe just from stuff like that, and they adapted stuff from the Sentinels that they were planning to do as a show, and then it became all these other things like comics and books. And
like the a lot of the Palladium source books would have like, okay, here's a mecha that just shows up in a background shot. So let's just make up a whole page about it. Okay, now it's a police robot, and it does this and that and whatever, and this is all of its specifications, and they're just kind of, they don't know any more than, you know, you or I, but they just, they would throw out all this stuff, and they had, for the most part, they did a lot of, you know, Palladium is, again, this isn't a tabletop gaming podcast, but Palladium is its own sort of, like Harmony Gold, it's its own kettle of fish, almost apart from the properties which it has. But they always had really good artists, and their books were relatively cheap, and they still tend to be. So it was a really good source for just, like, at a time when, you know, I didn't really have internet access, this is one of the great ways to just have pictures of these robots all the time. So I definitely wore out some of those books just flipping through them over and over and over again. They definitely expanded on the universe in ways that were not official.
Yeah, and there are all sorts of strange things that they've done with the property. Like, I think there's a Robotech meets Voltron comic that came out at some point. And
yeah, that was
I haven't read it, but it.
You want to talk about merge? Making a Frankenstein monster out of two Frankensteins. Let's put Voltron and Robotech together.
Yeah, combine five different anime series into one comic book.
Just pour it all in there. Who even cares, right?
And I guess it is kind of cool because those did used to air around the same point, and Toonami, and probably originally in syndication, was around the same year as well when they first came out in the 80s. But
I think the original Robotech aired in 85, and I want to say Voltron's 84, but you're right. The original syndication was very, very close too. So I think for a lot of people, that crossover makes sense. It makes as much sense to people in my age or older as a G.I. Joe Transformers does. Like in theory, like, what do these two universes have to do with one another? Well, they were both popular with the same kids at the exact same time, so of course they cross over. Like, obviously, you know, in the same way Detective Conan and Lupin can cross over. Like, but why? Like, well, because. So, but yeah, Robotech is a weird beast. I think the interesting thing, as someone who sort of, I mean, obviously I'm more of a fan of Macross now as I've grown older, but I still have a fondness for the Macross saga, particularly, of Robotech, just because it's hard to talk about it without talking about Harmony Gold and Masek at the same time, because their existence is all sort of intertwined.
Yeah, the two go hand in hand.
Yeah, you can't, if you bring up Robotech, you bring up Harmony Gold and you bring up Masek at the exact same time. Like, there's no way to just summon one of them.
Yeah.
But I think trying to view it apart from those two things, I'm pretty, generally speaking, like, it is a flawed work because it is three things stapled together that don't really belong together. But in a kind of weird way, for such an early show, you know, we forget how, you know, relative to how common anime is now, where we get 50 shows every 12 weeks and there's so much anime you can just go, I don't even want to watch any of it. I have plenty of old stuff to watch. You know, at a time when, you know, Voltron was much more the norm, which was very, very heavily edited. The original Macross saga is, things considered, I mean, the narrator is pretty obnoxious and there's obviously the boulderization of names and things like that, but for the most part, the content is pretty much there. Like the emotional beats, the plot points, the characters, the deaths and all that stuff. Like, it's all kind of intact. Like, it doesn't really pull its punches on the melodrama and that sort of thing. So I have a pretty fond, I still have kind of a fondness for it. And Southern Cross too, even though I think Southern Cross is obviously, the further you get away from Macross and Robotech, the worse it gets, I think. But, pardon me. Southern Cross is kind of interesting because I think it's, like, Macross really doesn't lose anything by being connected to Southern Cross and Genesis Climber Mospita. Like, Macross is kind of the beginning of it, so who cares what happens after it, really? You can take it as is or whatever. But Southern Cross, I don't know if you guys have tried to watch that at all. I don't know what your familiarity is, but as kind of its... Oh, sorry.
No, I was just going to say, like, it's... For me in Macross, like, I've only, in earliest Robotech, I've only gotten through, like, I'm, like, the least knowledgeable of Robotech, but yet I still keep collecting Robotech stuff for some reason. Like, I'm going to get around to watching it eventually. Like, I love that. I love the Macross movie. I love, you know, the Clash of the Bionoids dub, which has had a grown on me over the years.
You're a genius! Like, that comes
to me sometimes. I'm not listening to a woman!
God, that dub.
And then... But, like, I remember, like, as far as I got in Robotech, it was, like, up to, like, Roy Fokker's, like, death. And, like, that's all I remember, but that was, like, 10 years ago. And, you know, but I get all this stuff, because I, you know, over the weekend I found some Robotech Laserdisc movies, or, like, at a bookstore. So I was like, oh, I gotta get these, and I keep finding comic books, and it's like this consumable plague that it's like, it's just there to stare me down. Like, you don't know if you're going to watch me yet or not. And I'm like, I'd like to, but I don't know.
Yeah, I highly recommend Macross, or, you know, the Robotech version of the Macross saga, whatever you have access to, just because it sort of suffers in the last quarter, or I guess last sixth or so. But sort of everything, the early stuff is pretty good, and the way it builds, I would say, around Roy Fokker's death, like, right in that area up until kind of the sort of way through the series is just, I don't know, it's some of the best animated television I've seen. It's got such heft, and the mecha designs are just so incredible, and there's these battle scenes, and you've got pop stars on the decks of transforming battleships shooting nuclear missiles at each other, and it just kind of all works, like, and the main cast is just, I think they're strong enough that up until I think some of the things, there's a time skip later in the show, and some of the character beats don't, I think, both in the original and in Robotech, they just kind of don't, like, it doesn't really make sense, some of the character beats, but for the most part, the show shows a really good progression of, like, okay, these people, this is how their relationships change over time, and you get transforming F-14s thrown in, so that's a really nice bonus on top of that.
I will say this, like, I saw, like, one of the laser discs I got was, the Robotech Masters, like, that first episode, when it was, like, Dana's story. And I was like, oh, so we have this character, Dana, which is a character from Southern Cross, and she happens to be the daughter of Max and Melia. So then, like, they show this old Macross footage, and it's the episodes of when they meet, when, like, the really wonky, like, animation.
Oh, God, those episodes.
And I was like, yeah.
They look so
awful. And I'm like, well, it looked slightly better on Laserdiscs. I was like, ah, oh, those are those like episodes.
Yeah, those episodes, like, as weak as they look visually, they're really important, and I think one of the best kind of mini stories that series tells. Cross, because I think Southern Cross, I've tried to watch it just like in the original Japanese, and it kind of lost my interest a bit. Like, it definitely has lots of action, so I can't really fault it for that. Mm-hmm. One of my co-hosts got a lot farther in the show than I did, but I think Robotech actually kind of benefited Southern Cross, because by, like, if you just kind of watch it as is, it's just kind of a lot of fighting with some okay mecha designs, like the tank robot guy. Like, it's okay, it's kind of cool. The you know, the aliens on their little hover sleds, like, they're kind of cool looking. You know, everything is kind of okay, and there's lots of action, but it doesn't really feel like it means anything. But when you make Dana the daughter of these important characters from Macross, suddenly, like, it's that much more impact. Like, it feels more meaningful. So in a weird way, I think Robotech kind of lifts that story a little bit.
Yeah, well, that's interesting to see someone defending Robotech in 2017, because it seems like everyone trashes it completely these days. But it does have the merits, and, you know, it does make things that weren't that remarkable in Japan. You know, I don't think Southern Cross is probably as well known in Japan as it is to people who watch Robotech in the U.S., because it seems like it didn't really leave a mark or cause any sequel series like Macross did or anything over there, so...
I think that's your observation there's dead on, because Macross continues to get expansions and continues to get, you know, new series, continues to get more merchandise. Southern Cross is pretty much lost to history. And it's fondly remembered here because its connection to the Macross saga, I think, improves that work. It gives it this new context that, I mean, it's not a bad show. Like, you don't watch it and go like, oh, this is just garbage. It's got some cool robots and I like the thing that Southern Cross has that's really nice is there's lots of fleet action. There's lots of spaceships here and lots of spaceships here just kind of blowing each other up. And that's kind of a fun thing because, outside of, you know, sometimes Gundam or, well, I guess LOGH has it, but that's of a scale that it doesn't matter anymore, really. But you get lots of just like, here's like 15, 20 ships fighting 15, 20 ships and lots of little mecha flying around. You know, it's the kind of stuff you want to see as a kid. But that context of Dana being related to Max and Miria, like, just as is, it's just kind of there's lots of fights for 30 something on episodes, and, you know, okay.
But, you know, no kid at that time is going to break it up and be like, wait, this is from a different show. Like, you know, like, this shouldn't make any sense. You know, this is like, no one knew at that time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And weirdly enough, it kind of works. For as long as it does, like, it has works. Those are both part of the, was Genesis Climber Moth Speed a part of Big West? I don't remember that now, but that they were, you know, produced around this. No, it was Big West did Southern Cross. They produced Southern Cross, Macross, and Orgus.
Gotcha.
Right. And they all kind of had those themes of transforming robots and space battles. So they kind of, like, if you're going to piece together a couple of shows, it kind of makes sense. You know, I mean, you don't want to, but my understanding, and of course this may be apocryphal, I don't know if this is actually what happened, but my understanding is that Masek originally wanted to do just Macross, but obviously the syndication at the time, you had to have like 60 plus episodes, so the sort of Frankenstein of Robotech is a matter of necessity rather than Masek being like, my beautiful vision is to piece together these shows that don't fit. Like, it was just to get it on air.
Yeah, he was working for Harmony Gold, so like part of his job was to make sure like it got on air.
Right. Right.
And I think that the movie was supposed to originally just be just a dub of Megazone 2, 3, Part 1.
Yeah.
But then they were told him, you have to add in Southern Cross to this. So it's like they had that tap into the series and to the movie. So I guess some executive must have really been fond of Southern Cross. I think probably just because of all the adrenaline of, you know, there's naked girls in it. There's shower scenes. There's firing robots all the time. There's massive fleet battles. It's... You know, every boy wants to see Southern Cross, it seems like. It must have been what the executives were thinking. Because they're like, right, oh, this doesn't have the pop idol crap. This doesn't have the girls doing aerobics crap and all the stuff that was
in Cross. Hey, have you seen Arcana movies? Excuse me, have you seen Arcana movies? We don't have that crap in there. You can't have that. You can't have this. Too many girls. You got to get more robots and more action.
Right, that's what they told them.
Yeah. I didn't realize the owners of Canon were Israelis. So, like, when I see that video of Masek making fun of him, I was like, was he making fun of, like, East European trash or, like...
It sounded like Russian, actually.
Yeah, that's what I thought, too. Like, who controlled Canon? And then I realized there was Israelis. Like, oh, okay, that makes sense.
Oh, Masek. But that's what's so weird about it is because if you think about it out of you think about it like, well, of course, you know, young boys in the 80s or whatever, or even now, like, all they're going to want is the robots and the explosions, right? Yeah. But more of that kind of has faded away, and Macross is just kind of this overlap of various otaku and general tastes. Like, it's just like, well, you've got transforming robots and missiles, like, all day, and then you've got heavy melodrama and also pop idols and space aliens, and, you know, it just kind of, it has all these weird things kind of thrown together, and I think it almost kind of exists at the cusp of, you know, if we're coming off of the set, you know, late 70s and early 80s in anime where you've got it's all super robots or sort of the emergence of real robots and just fighting and selling toys. But you've also got kind of the idol culture and stuff like that and just sort of more human narratives, if you will. And it kind of exists right in the middle and I think kind of benefits from both in a fun way. Whereas if you just sort of go to either extreme where now we have shows about people just doing nothing all day, or back then you just had shows of just, okay, it's robot of the week, just stuff exploding, who cares? These characters don't make any sense. Macross kind of gets to have a little bit of both, and I think that's part of what makes it such an enduring tale. Mm-hmm. And again, I'm Harmony Gold and what they've done with it and how they've locked Macross out of North America. I think that's kind of a different discussion, but kind of taken as a piece of work. Yeah, that's a whole other thing, and I am
a different beast.
In 1985, to have the things that it has content-wise, like the character deaths and things like that, and to keep all of those things in and not do some of the things that even just a few years before they had done with Star Blazers or G-Force. And I don't remember if G-Force or Battle for the Planets came first, but
Battle for the Planets was in the 70s, and then G-Force was in the 90s.
Okay, yeah. Stuff like, oh no, it's a robot tank. You know, and Voltron did that too. They'd be like, oh, they're robots. And that was, they would sort of use that sort of stuff, or a character would clearly die off screen and they'd be like, oh no, he's hurt, and go, I'm okay. You know, that kind of stuff. Robotech plays it pretty straight. Like, characters get shot down and don't come back. You know, Roy Fokker, you know, pineapple salad or whatever, and he's done for.
Yeah, because just a year earlier, you have Voltron, where one of the main characters dies about five episodes in, and Go Lion. And the dub, they have him get sent to an alien planet for treatment, and then he comes back later, and he's like, I saw the ghosts of my past self, and they're using footage of the brother seeing the ghost of his his dead brother, and so they had to make all these ridiculous changes, but then somehow, I guess the standards had loosened up that much in just 1 year, or maybe they were just over-editing on Voltron, but... Yeah. You know, they somehow got away with a lot more on Robotech, and it's kind of interesting that things that are so different in it.
Yeah, I totally agree, and I think that's the thing that makes me kind of a little more fond of Robotech, that they, whether they just were more gutsy, or whether things had changed in a year or whatever, they, for the most part, Macross pretty much exists intact in Robotech. And just a year after Voltron, like you say, with all that stuff with Sven and going to a hospital planet or whatever, like that's, you know, that's at least commendable. So I do have some fondness for it. I mean, we can rag on it. It's 2017. It's plenty fine to rag on it all day. But for the most part, it pretty faithfully adapted that material for the time in which it was produced.
And then also the fact that Voltron was done by another company. It wasn't Harmony Gold.
Mm. Right. So. But Harmony Gold, you know, they made more edits to... I mean, in general, Harmony Gold's not really renowned for being that... light on edits, you know. I think people criticize the Harlock dub that they did. I haven't seen it, but they spliced two different series together with that and Queen Millennium and everything.
Okay, yeah, you're not talking about the Adventures of Captain Harlock. You're talking about the Captain Harlock Queen of a Thousand Years.
Right.
Yeah, that someone actually put up all 65 episodes of that show online, and and I found a torrent.
Have you seen any of it?
I've seen bits and pieces of it, but like from like the early parts, like I've seen up to like episode... in the teens somewhere of, like, Captain Harlock. So, like, when I watched it, it's like, oh, I've already seen, like, what happens here. But I think they took, like, episodes, like, later in the teens that I saw, like, episode, like, 4 or 5 for whatever reason to try to intertwine it with, you know, some scene from Queen Millennia, and they're just like, wait, how does this work?
Somebody's shared with me, like,
so that was not, like, Robotech where they just stacked them all one series, then another series, then another series. This just intertwined the footage of different series, which is a lot different.
I think the best way
make
to
ex- it So I was going to say they try to make it seem like, I've seen like a 5 or 6 minute clip somebody shared with me, but they've tried to make it seem like Harlock and Esmeraldas are like talking sometimes when they're not even in the same series. It's an interesting editing choice.
I was going to say the best way to explain it is, the guy who does Cornpone Flicks, Matt Murray, does these videos on like the Harlock saga. And he did one on this, like on that series. And so they kind of explain like all the faults with it. Especially how like the Viz International or Ziv International like handled the release of Captain Harlock in terms of like weird audio edits where like, they messed up on the time delay so much on the audio that when Harlock speaks, they're mimicking what Maya's mouth is saying. So it sounds like Harlock's voice is in Maya's mouth in this very intimate scene. And like they released it on home video, like nothing was wrong.
But thankfully, on a positive note there too, we do have Captain Harlock now being released. We've got the manga coming out. That's a really exciting time for this. So that is good. It gives me hope that one day Harmony Gold Stranglehold on Macross will fall apart and we'll get all of these other things that we haven't gotten for so long. It's a wonder we got Macross Plus. It really is.
Yeah, the Stranglehold, I call it a bankruptcy.
Something I never understood is how did Macross Plus and Macross 2 come out here in the 90s when at every other period it seemed like Harmony Gold was so strict about no one else can release anything Macross, and it doesn't seem like they had ever lost the rights to Robotech because it was on Toonami in the 90s. But maybe it was a different part of the 90s or a little earlier in the 90s, but it's something, they always had it.
It's something with like Manga Entertainment having Macross 2 and Plus, and I don't know how like Harmony Gold like couldn't control any of that. And so that's what it just gets so confusing on like how this stuff gets licensed. Like, you know, you have like, oh, Harmony Gold's in control of everything, but then like you get these companies that did release Macross on their own, and then you're like, well, where was Harmony Gold in that? Did they not have the power then? Were they kind of going through a financial thing where they couldn't take everyone to freaking court all the time? So that's what kind of really confuses me during that time period, which was like from the 90s into the mid-2000s or whatever.
And even in the late 2000s, they had Macross Plus airing on Anna Monday on the Sci-Fi Channel. Right, so they had the rights to it for a long time, like 20 years.
Yeah, right. I don't know the specifics, but my and I'm sure someone else will. I'm sure as soon as I say this, someone will light me up in comments for not knowing, and I'm sure another podcast, a better podcast than mine, has probably detailed it, but I think the issue is that Macross Plus came out at a time when they weren't fighting it quite as aggressively, and then as more Macross media continued to come out, they realized, okay, wait, we can't let other people profit off this potentially thing that could be profit for us, so let's just fight it at every turn and try to keep a stranglehold. So I think Macross Plus may have been maybe one they let by before they really started fighting this kind of tooth and nail. Because Macross was still, Superdimensional Fortress Macross was still relatively new in 85. I don't know if any follow-ups had come out at the time. Yeah, it was 1982. Mm-hmm. So I don't think much, you know, whereas now we can look back and go, oh, there's going to be like a million Macross things that come out. I think maybe at the time, they thought, well, if it's just like this one thing, you know, we don't have the rights to that, they release it. But then realizing its popularity and the potential to ruin other people's lives, I guess they decided to really up the ante. But maybe there's another side of the story that I don't know, and that could very well be the case.
That's what I was like.
I have not really seen much of Macross Frontier or Macross Delta, so I don't really know if it's much of a loss that stuff like that is not getting released here or not. But I don't know if any of you have seen any of that stuff. It's a newer series.
The way I understand it is people either really love it or really hate it. And that's how it was for 7, too. Like, you got people that like, just absolutely love 7 and people that absolutely hate 7.
Yeah. I haven't seen 7 either.
Not me either.
Pretty much hit the nail on the head. Whereas Macross is pretty generally revered. It's one of those things, like, if you've seen it, you probably at least don't hate it. The other Macross things have skewed more one way or the other. Again, the original Macross kind of keeps a good balance with the pop idols and the mecha combat and the politics. Like, it does a pretty good job of balancing all that. A lot of things like Macross 7 was like, let's just have Keytars in space, and like, so it's more on that side of things.
Planes can be piloted by 6-string air guitars. Why not?
I mean, in my world, yes. I mean, maybe that's what's wrong with the world these days.
I want to live in your world, Grant.
It's a great place to live. But there's the other Macross things. Like, I've seen a bit of Frontier. I've seen some of, I want to say Zero, where they had CGI Mecha, and a lot of it, just it didn't jump right out and grab me the same way. And maybe that was at the time I watched it. I know for a long time I kind of took a break from fandom, and my expectations were a little too high, I think, for new works. A lot of times I would say, well, I'm going to watch a new anime, so let me compare it to some of the greatest things I've seen of all time. And of course it came up short, so I didn't care for it as much. But I wonder now, I'm a little more lax on that. More now I'm just like, is it good? Is it consistent? I'll watch it. So I wonder if my opinions would change. But a lot of those things didn't grab me if I could see them. But a lot of them I also just haven't had a chance to see, because I would really like to watch them legally. That's part of why I rewatched Macross last year. I was like, please, Amazon, you know, keep doing this. And of course they took those viewing numbers and said, well, of course, let's make Amazon Strike or Anime Strike. That'll be great. You know, so
mission put everything behind a double paywall.
I was like this. Let's double paywall it, guys. No, it's not what I meant.
So when do we want to start talking about Robotech, the movie?
Let's do it.
Have you seen any other Robotech movies? Just before we get to the main one that we're going to talk about, have you seen like the Most Beata movie and the Shadow Chronicles or no?
I have not seen neither.
I have seen Sentinels. I have seen Shadow Chronicles, which I own. And I got Sentinels in those DVD box sets. And I think those are the only other two that I've seen. I've never seen Macross 2.
I
think it's those two that I've seen. And there was another one that came out recently that was just like some recut footage. And by that point, I was like, I'm not giving these people any more of my money.
Yeah, the Most Beata one was just a compilation movie with footage from the show.
Oh, the Love Live?
They doubled it. They doubled it up with Shadow Chronicles, I guess, because they were like, in case you want an actual movie, we'll include one of those on there too. But Shadow Chronicles is kind of, it's like Sentinels, where it's completely its own thing. It doesn't have anything to do with it doesn't use any Japanese footage or anything, I don't think. But this is more like the show, where it's a compilation of different series and OVAs into one thing. So I would say this is probably the most Robotech of all the Robotech movies.
I agree. This one definitely deserves to have Robotech in the title. Like, yeah. It's a thing.
My thing is like, you know, watching this, like, the Southern Cross footage did not need to be there, but Masek tried so hard at the will of canon to, you know, make it a true canon movie and try to add all this action to it, and then try to shoehorn some sort of, like, plot where it involves, gosh. in terms of, like, you know, because I know, like, in the interview with Masek, he was mentioning how, like, you know, okay, Southern Cross is 16mm, Megazone is 35. Southern Cross is going to look like utter crap, and they're like, "Oh, we don't care, just do it." And it shows, because there's certain scenes where they have characters in there, and it's just a flesh toned face. There's no detail to their face; you can't see what they look like. And I'm just going, "Dear God, this is garbage." God, screw this. And it goes back to Megazone, and I'm like, "Okay, this is so much prettier looking." And it just seems like the story was like, was told a whole lot better in Megazone. Like, that was the key points. And, you know, that's, like, the main focus. And then Southern Cross is like, well, here's the stuff that's happening outside of the Megazone realm. But that serves no relevance to, like, the main story at all.
Yeah, this is a good kind of sampler of the Robotech experience, which is, like, in some ways, you're like, hey, I'm, you know, at the time, it would have been like, I get to see a thing that I couldn't see otherwise. So that's pretty great. And a lot of the sort of visuals aren't edited. And then it's also just got bolderized names, and the dialogue kind of matches. And then other times it's like wildly edited and interspliced with other footage, and dialogue is completely flipped upside down to make this topsy-turvy plot, you know, make sense. It's just like, oh, what's happening?
Yeah, the Megazone story wasn't told linearly. It was like, you know, you take parts like halfway in to make it into the beginning, because it fits in with the Southern Cross footage, because, you know, like, that's the only way to sort of tell a halfway decent story. Then we'll get back to the beginning of Megazone with Mark Landry or whatever riding his motorcycle down the street. And it just some things was just so odd. And, like, you know, he's riding his motorcycle, and, you know, in Megazone, he runs into the girl, and it's a girl he's picking up, you know, off the street, because he's such a hot, cool dude in his motorcycle, where it's like, oh, hey, Becky, how are you? I just happened to run into you at this moment that you're here. Hop on the motorcycle. I'll get you downtown to your dance studio practice thing, whatever. And it's just, to me, it was just so wonky to watch that, because I love Megazone so much.
Yeah. Yeah, that's the thing. It's a bizarre, you know, and we talked about this a little bit before we started recording, but you know, I was thinking about, cause like on my pod, we sometimes, not to plug my own, but we try to do a brief summary for people who are listening in case they haven't seen it. And I have seen this, I saw this a couple years ago. And then when we talked about doing this for the pod, I watched it again a couple days ago.
Yeah.
And I was sitting down tonight to kind of get everything ready and get in the right headspace. And I was like, wait, what happened in this? Like what the F did I just watch? It's like a double whammy because like I've seen Megazone 2-3 and I've seen Southern Cross, but then I've also watched this film. So it's all just this like, and the film itself is a mess. So it's this whole muddled,
yeah,
confusing thing. Like the film does not communicate its plot very well.
It's challenging my reality of Megazone and what I love to like something that's like, this is like, you know, universe B of Megazone. If this is how Megazone should have been, and you're like, no, I can't accept that reality. This is my own because that's the truth. Or is the other the truth? I don't really know.
This is Megazone 2-3 rebuild, right? It's the remix 1.11.
You cannot Masek. Yeah.
Yeah. So I honestly don't know even, I guess.
I get, okay. So beginning, the best way I can describe it, there was a battle taking Southern Cross footage and mm-hmm. then Colonel Andrews is fighting it and then he somehow gets killed. But mm-hmm. then abducted to make clones so he can boss people around to upload data to some crappy satellite in space in order for the aliens in space from Southern Cross to invade Earth. And somehow that in... Crap.
Okay, so they kill him and then abduct him and then clone him, which, you know, I hate it when that happens. I hate it when I get killed, abducted, cloned.
Now that is just a bad day waiting to happen, yeah.
Case of the Mondays. With the idea that he's going to go back, and then he like tries to convince everyone that, okay, no, seriously, there's no aliens. That was just like a military exercise. You guys are blowing this all out of proportion.
Yeah.
And then one of the soldiers or is upset by this, and like the motorcycle contains like a computer uplink or a matrix for all their defense stuff. And so he tries to give it to his buddy Mark. And then Mark, you know, runs off with the motorcycle before it can be totally explained and is getting chased by goons.
Yeah.
And then there's because Colonel Andrews is secretly uploading it to that satellite. And then, like, Mark is, like, on a movie and he meets Eve, who's, like, the pop idol, you know, virtual reality version of the SDF-1's, like, computer mainframe. And then...
you were reciting the Wikipedia page off memory better than I can.
Well, I just... Oh, God, my... What? Like, my forehead. Like, it's like the... Like, she's like the personification. I forget the most difficult about this movie. No one's motivations really make any sense. Like, the evil Robotech masters are winning fights the whole time. It's not super clear why they need to make a clone.
Yeah, and then they have some sort of military council meeting, and by that point, I'm just like, I don't give a fuck. Like, I just don't care. Yeah. Go back to Megazone. That kind of sort of made sense.
Yeah, and there's like a military coup. Like, they start to figure out that Andrews isn't who he says he is, and there's a military coup where he takes over.
Yeah.
They've like, the other problem is that they decided to give all these characters, you know, very 80s names like Stacy and Kelly and Debbie, and like they all kind of sound the same. Like, whichever one of his like girlfriend's friend dies. Girlfriend who.
Yeah, Andrews, yeah.
Or no.
The one that was the person editing the video, because apparently he spilt the beans to Colonel Andrews about, like, you know, I'm going to give you this bike. As a matter of fact, my girlfriend's best friend is making a movie about it, so you won't find her. Oh, crap, I shouldn't have said that.
Yeah,
but the best part of that is when they go, like, to Stacy's apartment or whatever, and then they find her, like, you know, she's got shot in the face, and then you got Becky, she's like, well, maybe she just, like, fell down or, like, you know, like, has a coma for some ungodly reason. And you see this big splatter of blood on the wall, like, no, that is not what happened.
I was amazed that they left in so much blood and, like, so much nudity and everything in this film.
Yeah, like, you know, it's almost like posters and like, there was the attempted rape scene too.
Yeah, it's almost like the Protoculture DVDs where they added in the shower scenes back to the Southern Cross part. But, you know, this was actually released in the 80s, not in the 2000s to the nostalgia market. Supposedly this was going to be, you know, a kid's movie to compete with the Transformers movie and the GoBots movie and everything else that was coming out back then.
Right.
And they had kept all this stuff in there, and it's no wonder it didn't get released outside of Texas, you know?
But now I'm trying to remember what happens in the rest of the film, though. So, like, they find her dead, and he... Eventually, there's a mecha fight between him and Colonel Andrews. That's the kind of the big... They defeat the robot, the Masters, and there's a big mecha fight with him and Andrews, and he saves the day and gets the girl. That's kind of the wrap-up. But it's, God, there's so many twists and turns.
But,
and
yeah, but then that leads up to the airport scene, which that ending scene for Robotech was animated later. That apparently, I think, like, Ishiguro didn't, or somebody that worked on Megazone didn't even know it existed for, like, 30 years. And I think it might have been Ishiguro that didn't know about it until they had some sort of Megazone event. And, like, oh, by the way, do you want to see this extended cut made for this American movie using our footage? And he's like, what are you talking about? And it can kind of almost pass, but not really.
Yeah.
Oh, gosh.
It's like... The original animation doesn't look the same. Southern Cross doesn't match with Megazone. Like, it just doesn't. And, like, you can tell, because didn't Masek originally intend this to take place before, or, like, kind of during the Macross saga, I want to say? I heard that, and then Canon pushed it to be closer to Southern Cross, and it just doesn't. And then, of course, thematically, it almost would make more sense to put this before Mos Vita. You know, at the end, because Shinji Aramaki did the transforming, you know, mecha motorcycles for both Megazone 2-3 and Genesis Climber Mos Vita. So you'd almost want to move, like, if you're going to do Megazone 2-3, you might as well put the motorcycles together, but it just doesn't. And, you know, God help us if we get into, like, Robotech's canon, because if I'm not mistaken, it was a big surprise when the Masters show up at the beginning of Southern Cross. But this is supposed to be like 2 years prior. So if, you know, like, I guess they just kind of like, well, I guess we can just forget space aliens occurred and then be like, ah, no, they're back. Like, it seems.
So did this come out while the show was first airing in syndication, or what was the release date of this thing?
Well, if the show came out in 85, the release for this movie was 86, and it was actually like 2 weeks before the Transformers movie came out.
Okay, so this was after it had already aired in full.
Yeah. It would have happened,
and then it still had all these plot holes.
Yeah.
Yeah. It either.
And I'm on the Robotech Wikia, and it says that there's a comic adaptation where the ending was plagiarized from Dirty Pair. So they've just spliced so many different things together.
It just gets better.
The ear.
Oh. It says that it ends with the entire ending from Mark nearly being killed to the climax was dropped and rewritten. Instead, a new ending inspired by Dirty Pair was created with two alive heroines dressing up in leather gear and taking on BD Andrews. So that's something that happened in the
80s. Now, delightful. Please, I have to read this comic.
Yeah, exactly.
You've given Grant a mission for life. Collect this comic. Sure.
Like most Robotech comics, it involves a lot of traced art and being not good.
Now, hang on, Grant. Now, here's what they did back then. Our Robotech art was so good. I don't know if you know this, but they made an official guide on how to draw Robotech. Did you ever see that comic?
No, I have not. I actually posted.
No, I posted up on Twitter because, like, I think the guy that runs the Veep show from Collection DX went on this tirade on, like, how crappy the new Robotech comic was. And I was like, hold on, this guy didn't follow the format from how to draw Robotech because I have the official guidebook in my hand. Why did this artist not follow this? And I will pull up that link right now. So give me a sec. So you can see that this new artist, they don't follow their own thing. All right, I got the link posted here so you know what the image looks like. Yeah, I found this at a comic book shop in Athens like a couple months ago. Look at that. Like, that's official right there.
Oh, yeah. That's it.
That's the money.
That's
the $2.50 I spent.
step one to drawing Robotech is to, pardon me. Step one to drawing Robotech is to just kind of make a character's hair so long you don't even have to draw their body. Like, why even, like, why bother, right? Like,
neckline, draw a limb. Screw that. You don't need that garbage.
You could put some color and definition on your robot, or you could just make it all monochrome and just hope people figure it out. Just...
Doesn't matter. It's official. That's how it's supposed to be done from here on out. Until version 2 comes out, which who knows when they'll make that.
Right? Jeez. But speaking of random offshoot things, I don't want to get too off topic, random offshoot things of Robotech that actually aren't, or at least I don't recall them being quite so bad, the Robotech novelizations were reserves. I read those pretty religiously because they were one more way to experience that, you know, years and years ago. I remember those being pretty good, but okay. That it's been some time. May be nostalgia goggles.
Yeah, I've seen those novels over the years, like at, you know, either bookstores or used flea markets or whatever, and so, like, I've always been kind of curious on how well those were written. And do you know, like, an exact number of how many Robotech books have been written?
The number 6 pops to mind, but I could just be totally making that up. I have no clue.
There's no other, like, 0 digits after that 6, or...
Yeah, I know, right? It's not as, Harmony Gold.
Is it not as expansive as the Battletech novels or the Warhammer novels?
Right. That, well, they, yeah, keep those making? Are... Well, yeah, Warhammer figured the formula out, you know, a couple years ago to start doing all that Horus Heresy stuff, and now that stuff prints money for them. Yeah. Battletech, I don't have a whole lot of familiarity with Battletech, but yeah, there's a lot of novels about big stompy bots shooting each other. So, which, I mean, I can't fault. I like big stompy bots as much as the next guy, so. But yeah, the Robotech novels were pretty good if memory serves, but that, again, that could just be, you know, quote me on it, and I wouldn't recommend purchasing them.
I would quote you on it. Because I'm looking at it through, I'm understanding your lens through, like, however old you were when you saw it. It's how I would, like, say, how I would kind of promote Space Jam. There's still a 12-year-old me that thinks that movie's amazing. 31-year-old me is still not going to see it because it's going to destroy the mindset and that innocence of my 12-year-old me. So I'm just not going to take that risk. So I'm just going to still say that I think Space Jam is actually a pretty good movie.
So, I mean... When I was a kid, and those monsters go, you ever heard of the Dream Team? Well, we're the Mean Team. That was, like, the hardest thing I'd ever heard at elementary school. I was like, oh my god!
I listened to the heck out of that soundtrack on cassette.
Yeah, it's Space Jam theme, and I believe I can fly. I
mean, and the Bugs Bunny rap, if you remember that. Yeah. Oh, yes. God, that was terrible. It got to the point where I listened to it. I was like, oh my god, I'm getting sick to my stomach. I need better music. And then that's when I turned to alternative rock and ska music when I was hitting the airwaves in 97. Great time to change my music taste.
Right. Now I need to dig out my Space Jam Laserdisc. I haven't seen it in probably 20 years either. And then maybe that's a good thing.
I thought you said your dad watched it recently and he freaking wanted to kill himself or something.
I don't remember that. Maybe that was something else. I don't know.
But is that, is that something your dad would do?
Oh, jeez.
Yeah.
Bless my parents for all the horrible films I dragged them to as a child. But one of the films I did not drag them to is this, because Robotech the movie did not get released in my neck of the woods. But man, it's bizarre. It's very strange. And I think it's easy to. Just to kind of lose yourself in the Megazone parts for a little while.
Yeah, until... that was the fun parts.
Cool, yeah, good stuff. But the voice acting is... It's not the worst thing that's ever happened.
I actually... There was some good lines delivered. Like, one, for example, is when he gets the Modat 5, and they're like, oh, you know, like, you know, Mark, you're telling us bull crap. Like, none of this stuff happened. What if you're just making it up? And the mechanic's like, you know, Mark's got a good point. I'm seeing the bike, and I'm seeing the bike leak transmission fluid on my freaking, you know, garage. It's there. So yeah. I think Mark has a very good point and observation of what's happening. Let him figure it out. Like, I thought that was a very good delivered line.
Yeah, and I think that, again, is kind of a testament to Masek. I mean, look, he wasn't proud of this when it was done, but for the most part, he could relatively competent, especially compared to its peers, right? Compared to the other things that were coming out in 86.
Yeah,
other anime and things like that, and other adaptations. That's a pretty good line, and there's some well, maybe not delivered, but at least well written dialogue you know, at points. Obviously he was under other constraints that made making sense of this difficult. I think my favorite fun adaptation is that obviously Megazone 2-3 takes place in space. This is supposed to take place on Earth, and at the point where Mark gets knocked out into space, you know, it's supposed to be like this, the, you know, the hull, the ship explodes and he gets sucked out, but they're like, oh, I chased him into the space combat simulator. It's like, yeah. Well done, guys. Good cover. No, I'm just gonna figure that out.
Oh man.
What a challenge that must have been.
Yeah, I think a lot of people are probably unfair to Masek because they regard him as, you know, a butcher of anime.
No, the Antichrist of anime. Get it? That's his proper term, 87, circa.
Yeah. But, I mean, you look at, he was involved until he died with anime adaptations, and the later stuff he did, like Naruto and Bleach, he was even involved with for Viz. And, you know, those are not really, like, butcherings of the original shows. They're pretty accurate, and I think he would have liked to have been as accurate as he could in the earlier stuff, but it was just the constraints at the time.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So yeah. You can't really fault him for that.
Yeah, I think he's an easy villain. He's an easy name to go, ah, he's the one that ruined anime, when really it's more your Harmony Golds and your Canon films and these sort of kind of nameless executive guys at these places. You mean, well, yeah, we'll bankroll this, but you have to do X, Y, Z. You have to splice these things together. So
yeah, it's too many hands in the pot, and those hands have a lot of money, but to back him up, and he's just kind of the puppet.
And all the people that love Macross today, I mean, how many people in the U.S. would really know about Macross if it weren't for the fact that Robotech was created to begin with? Because otherwise, it would have been an obscure series that was only in Japan, like, you know, all the Brave series that came out there before Gao Gaigar that have never been translated. You know, those are probably well remembered and regarded in Japan, but almost no one in the U.S. has seen them because they almost none of them got any dubs. So,
yeah, it's very easy to overlook the importance of these early works in just kind of making the market exist. I mean, obviously, fandom existed before that, and we had, like, these aren't the first things that ever happened, but it was a big breakout hit, and you know, about anime right now, if it weren't for guys like Masek, you know, putting in that work and putting in that time and just trying to get these things over here, you know, that sort of thing. I think it's a similar relationship that, say, Power Rangers and Super Sentai has. Like, it's very easy to hate on Power Rangers and Saban and the various kind of business practices and things like that. But without that happening, you don't have modern toku fandom over here. Like, you wouldn't even, you know, maybe it would have been something else a few years later, but the fact of the matter is it was that, and it opened the door for something else. Now, obviously, I think original Macross has aged a lot better than Mighty Morphin Power Rangers, but you know, there's going to be some things left on the cutting room floor, you know, in that sort of opening push to kind of really get this stuff out there. Whereas, and I think Robotech, even though Harmony Gold would like for this not to be the case, I think Robotech was more explicitly anime, right? It definitely, because of its heavier themes and because of the, I think its enduring legacy and its kind of that opening salvo as, you know, anime is a thing and here's what it can be about and the pop idols and all that stuff. Like, it's harder to remove its animeness than, say, like Voltron, which almost, it didn't quite have that same impact for, I think it was almost more like just another cartoon, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
So again, Masek he didn't walk on water. Like, he made mistakes too, like anybody else, but here we are now with too many shows to watch, you know, hooray.
Yeah. I know, like, when cause we both wrote for the Anime Origin Stories thing, and my segment on mine was like, you know, Toonami's a big contribution to, like, anime fandom today. But it all goes back to putting anime on TV. And Masek's, you know, theology of, like, you know, you gotta make it accessible and adapt it to the language of that country, so then it'll, you know, and put it on television, so then, like, you get a fandom created. And not just have it in this different language where no one's like, oh, I don't know how to feel about that. But when you adapt it to you know, a country's, you know, speech and culture in a way, like, it's going to be more adaptable. Because to him, he's saying that, like, because this was on an old ANN cast when they interviewed him, like, you know, I think a couple months before he passed away, was that he said, you know, like, every cartoon has a dub on it, you know, and, you know, everything's dubbed. Everything's got to have – it's got to be adapted to the culture in order to tell the story correctly. So, really, you know, as much people want to bash, you know, Masek for, you know, ruining Macross or whatever, but without him doing that, we wouldn't – as anime fandom today, it would not be the same.
Mm-hmm.
And most television plays a huge part in that, but it's his formula and how he got it on there is what's worked for the past 30 years.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I mean, even the other shows that aired after Robotech on Toonami, like Dragon Ball Z and Sailor Moon, I mean, those had a lot of edits too. They cut out episodes, but at the same time, those shows became huge.
Yes.
Just because the underlying material is strong enough that it can shine through it. Edits, and people can still get the gist of Goku and Vegeta firing beams at each other without having the exact same music or any of the changes that were made.
Mm-hmm.
You can still pretty much get the gist of it, even if it does make changes. And we wouldn't have Toonami where it is today if it wasn't for where Toonami started. You know, Outlaw mm-hmm. Star is coming back in a couple weeks, and Dalek on Twitter, he said some comments saying the original airing of Outlaw Star, it doesn't even count as an airing of Outlaw Star because it's not even the same show, and they're not re-airing it now. It's airing on TV for the first time, and that's kind of ridiculous. They did cut one episode, sure, and they toned down the gay character, and they removed all the references to death and everything because of Columbine having happened. But I mean, it's still basically the same show at heart, and the same is true for Robotech.
Mm-hmm.
And even though there are the additions of the stuff about protoculture and all the stuff that they changed and tried to tie them all together with changes, but in most episodes, the same thing is happening in the English and the Japanese version. You know, a bunch of people shooting at each other, basically, in most episodes. And, you know, maybe they have slightly different motives, but it's basically the same show. And the uncut releases that came later wouldn't have happened if it hadn't had the initial exposure to begin with.
Yeah, right. Totally agree. Right. And, like, obviously we want the purest form of a work to come out. Like, that would be great. We have the luxury of being purists. We have the luxury to say, well, I'll only watch the most accurate release possible. Whereas back in the day, to get on TV, there's no way that was going to happen, right? So there had to be some things left on the cutting room floor. And for the most part, these works, you know, are relatively intact. You know, seeing, hard for me to remember sometimes, like, now wait, did this happen in Robotech or not? Like, obviously don't miss the narrator. Like, he's an obvious omission that's great in the original Macross. But for the most part, it hits a lot of the same beats. You know, there's a couple scenes that I'm like, okay, yeah, this was probably not in. But for the most part, it's there. And, you know, like you're saying with Outlaw Star, like, I watched that show and enjoyed it. Yes, it was an edited version. I don't know if I'd go so far as to say it doesn't even count. Like, that's, I mean, everybody's entitled to their own opinion, but that seems a little extreme because you're talking about a release that was 20 years ago on TV that
right.
even its edited form could only exist because of these edited things that had come before us. And, you know, now we thankfully live in the world of pandas. That's amazing.
Yeah, and even when Bebop first aired on Adult Swim, Adult Swim didn't start the way it was now, because Adult Swim started almost exactly the time of 9/11, and then they had to edit out a whole lot of stuff from Bebop, and they had to cut out some episodes entirely, and some of those edits were kept in the airings for 15 years until they tried to air the HD version, and that only lasted about a month.
Yeah, the ones I can think of is, like, they took out the Waltz for Venus episode because it was a plane hijacking, and then I think it was either the same episode. No, I think it was when, like, that one is, like, two gay guys about to go at it, and then Faye interrupts them by putting a Glock at one of their heads. But they took out one of the guys, so it just looks like he's just, like, on his knees, standing over his bed for no reason. Like, in shock, like, what are you doing in here? I'm only by myself. And they left
it. Yeah, and they edited out some nude magazines. And
yeah, that's right.
Other things like that. And even some of the violence early on. But it still, basically a lot of people love Outlaw Star and Cowboy Bebop because of their airing in the early 2000s. And, you know, they have the famous video that they did, the Dreams video with Outlaw Star footage and everything.
Mm-hmm.
And you can get some of the themes of Outlaw Star just from that, even though it's just a couple of minutes, you know. so there's just a lot of stuff that wouldn't be possible now if it wasn't for the earlier adaptations of anime. And people just completely trash on it and say that they ruined anime when they, I mean, they probably gave billions of dollars or to Japan just from licensing internationally, you know, all these shows that, yes, they were edited, but they were a huge benefit for the anime industry and made it much more of an international presence than it was before.
And these were essentially the first guys to hit the beach. They're going to get hit. Like there's going to be some loss. You know, they're making way for the shows that came behind it. And obviously now, if a show cuts an entire episode in 2017, I think that's more egregious than a show doing it 20 years ago, right? I think you have to have your expectations kind of, you know, and I think part of that too is, I don't want to be like, oh, young fans don't get it, because it's not really the case. But when you grow up in an era where everything is available all the time at the click of a button, it's hard to even conceptualize a time when forget about just getting anime, for a time when you had to show up to the TV to watch things at a certain time, you know, like when you had to be like, oh, it comes on at 3. I've got to be home at 3 or I just don't get to watch this thing that I've been looking forward to.
And I'm too poor to own a VCR.
and they had it on at bizarre times because of Cartoon Roulette. So you have to show up at like 4:45 or something because they would air some Space Ghost or Birdman shorts between Thundercats in it. And so it would be difficult to get your timer to get it exactly right. And sometimes you would miss it or whatever. But, you know, that was just the cost of doing business back then, right? I mean, that's just the way things were back then. And
90% of a show now would be a travesty, but getting 90% of a show back then is a triumph. Like, oh, we got so much of it and we got to see it. Like, how great is this?
Yeah.
So, at least. I think that a lot of that is Masek's work more than, I think if you have an issue, you know, take it up with American censor policy and all that sort of thing. But
yeah.
Aged well is this film. It is the opposite of everything we're talking about.
It goes to show that we'd rather talk about other things in this film, but I think we've said everything about this film. And Grant, you're doing a good job staying on the formula of how we review stuff on this show, where we go off topic when it's a show that we just couldn't care less about. But we tried. And then we gave our 90%, and I think that's good enough.
Yeah, I think the thing that's so weird about this film is like it's very difficult to talk about in isolation because it is this hodgepodge mix of other things, and it also has Robotech in the title, so you have to talk about Robotech and all that kind of stuff included in it. But this film does not make it easy to discuss because it's so tangled. I definitely enjoyed myself well enough watching the Megazone 2-3 parts. Just about everything else was, I mean, Southern Cross, it's really unfair to put Southern Cross in the same space with Megazone 2-3. I think that's, I don't think Southern Cross is a classic per se, but I don't really know if that's fair. You know what I mean? It just hurts those parts of the film and it makes you go like, this kind of.
I think you could probably use this as a sleep aid, like watching Odin, Photon Sailor Space Starlight movie is what I heard. I heard that like the joke is for Odin is like it's not an anime, it's a sleep aid. Yeah. And you can put Macross in there as like, all right, I gotta up the dosage, just
how can you sleep with that 80s metal soundtrack in Odin?
To be fair, this does have a few. Now, most of the soundtrack in this Robotech the movie is reused or slightly edited versions of Robotech themes.
What they had this, they have great music like the future is now.
You have a lot of kind of fun pop in this that's like, okay, yeah, I'm kind of digging this.
Maybe we should all live underground, trying to something out against the sun.
I'm tapping my foot. I can feel it.
Yeah,
I
got the feel that beat, rocking it.
So I looked up, Do You Remember Love, when it came out, and it came out in 84. I have to wonder why they didn't use clips from that instead of using clips from Southern Cross. Kind of a weird choice. Since this is actually a theatrical film that they could have used some stuff from. I mean, maybe Harmony Gold just never had the rights to it for some reason.
I think that might have been it, or there might have been some sort of, like, legal stuff between, like, maybe that was the thing, because, like, I know with Macross, Do You Remember Love, there's still, like, maybe today still legal issues on it in terms of, like, who really owns it. So you had, like, what was it, Tatsunoko Big West and some other company, like, fighting over creative control on it, so maybe Harmony Gold was, like, we're not going to worry about touching that right now.
Yeah, and I mean, not to bring, it's not like continuity has anything to do with this film, but since they technically wanted it to take place slightly before Southern Cross, Do You Remember Love, adapting that would be hard, because Do You Remember Love is a, sort of a recap movie, sort of?
Do You Remember Love, to me, is just sort of like a retelling of Macross, but it's his own thing.
Yeah, I mean,
it's like a compilation with the footage, right? I mean,
well, it's a compilation movie in the sense that it tries to retell the events of the series, but it's like a film that might like reuse footage or whatever. Like, it is done up to the nines. Like, that's one of the most gorgeous films ever made. And has some of its own soundtrack stuff and things like that. And funnily enough, in the Macross continuity, Do You Remember Love, even though it's a compilation movie to us in, you know, real space, in Macross, Do You Remember Love exists, and it is itself a film in that universe that retells the events of that war. Characters in Macross, like they,
so it's like, not
like
it's not canon in any way to the timeline of the TV show, is what you're saying. But it's like adapting, like, but it's a film to the people, like saying, like, here's what happened in our own timeline, but we just condensed into a movie format.
Private Ryan is a film about a war that really happened in our timeline, right? It's just a film version of it. And so obviously there's some license taken to make it a good film. Yeah. Like, Do You Remember Love is to the characters of Macross like that. It is a historical movie, essentially. It is an adaptation of a historical event. which is just kind of fun and weird.
Yeah, but see, to Carol Mori, that makes perfect sense to him. Whereas us, it was like, wait, hold on. What's step one on this?
That kind of does make sense. Like,
I get it. I mean, I get it in theory, but like, I understand it. But at the same time, you're going, it's like, it's a freaking cartoon.
Well,
it's sort of like on the DC and Marvel comics. There are comics published within those universes about the characters, so that they'll sometimes be reading it and they'll be like, "Hey, that's not what I'm like at all." But you know, there's like a universe within a universe.
Breaking that kind of confusing, dimension.
But in terms of like trying to, you know, if you're going to splice, again, I think if you're going to splice Megazone 2-3 with anything, you try to splice it across so that Mospita is what immediately follows it. But yes, making it right before Southern Cross and making it happen during Do You Remember Love, I mean, who cares really? Like, it all doesn't fit. You know, it's just, you know, pick your poison, I guess.
Yeah,
they should have just dubbed Do You Remember Love instead of letting whoever dubbed it. Was it Celebrity Just for Kids that did Clash of the Vianoids?
Yeah, but that dub was, the way I understand it, is an English dub from people like either learning how to speak English or teaching people English from like China.
And yeah, it's
commissioned by Toho or something. And then Celebrity Just for Kids like was able to pick that up and license it over here. So that's why we had like the Phoenix dub and like Arcadia My Youth, aka Vengeance of the Space Pirate, and so like a bunch of other stuff that came over here in the States. It's like probably like from that same recording studio, which the creators of those titles probably still don't even know that exists to this day. Except for Mikimoto, because I'm the one that told him.
On the Wikipedia page, it says there's two different dubs of it. One that was made in Hong Kong, and then one that was released by Celebrity Just for Kids.
I think I've seen the Hong Kong dub.
I thought they were both the same thing.
I don't know. It's all very confusing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
One way or the other, the dub that I heard is a painful.
Well, it says that Masek was asked to produce a film by Canon of Robotech, and he wanted to do You Remember Love? But Harmony Gold was unable to license due to, in quotes, political reasons. So Megazone 2-3 was used instead.
Yeah,
and so the citation is of ANN cast with Masek. But unfortunately, I can't get to it because ANN got hacked. So when I click the link, it takes me to, you know, it says, don't go here, you know, it's
well, now
not
it's
good for your computer and everything.
Well, now it's animenewsnetwork.cc or whatever domain they're using for the time being, and I don't know if those episodes are archived up there or not. But
yeah, I don't know if they have all the old stuff. It'll probably be fixed by the time this comes out.
Yeah,
episode.
So yeah.
It may be in their iTunes feed. Might be have to go back and check that out. That'd be interesting to look up. But sometimes certain pods, I don't know if Aiden's like this, but
I have heard that interview like two or three times, actually two times, and it's so interesting, like his whole backstory on like working for Harmony Gold. It's a great interview. Mm-hmm. As soon as people can get to it to listen to it,
yeah.
Because 4chan was like, "Oh, you didn't like, I don't approve of your Yuri on Ice review. We're gonna hack your website," whatever the reasons were.
It's always something, but
is that what happened?
I don't know. I'm just assuming, but like, are my assumptions, are my Alex Jones theories on anime hacking sites any wrong or out there? I don't think that too much.
All right.
It's a controversy, yeah, I tell you.
I wouldn't be surprised if someone mad over her for you.
But yeah, I'm sure Masek, I've heard the interview once, but it's been a while now, but he's, you know, a lot of those old fandom stories I find almost just as fascinating or more fascinating than, the actual production history on some of this stuff. Cause a lot of this that, you know, we idolize it, but for a lot of these guys, these shows are a paycheck, right? And, you know, they're working. So they're not always interesting tales, but the tales of trying to bring this stuff over and adapt it to the U.S. are far more interesting, I think, sometimes because they're just so bizarre. Like we're talking about, like, oh, hey, I've got this thing that we want to do. And then your executives are like, no, more guns, more glitz, all that kind of stuff. And I'm sure, you know, Mace
probably kind of movie.
Yeah, so I definitely need to go listen to that again too. That would have been smart to listen to that before this podcast, but I didn't do that.
It's okay. If I can find my recording and send it to you on Mega so you can listen to it at your leisure.
There is like a saved copy when I try to pull it up, and it says that they talked about Ren and Stimpy and Lady Death and all sorts of different things that
he wouldn't
think he was involved with. And it says his hand in promoting Star Wars in 1977, which I didn't know he had any involvement with Star Wars.
Yeah, he was working for some film industry that had something to do with Star Wars at the time, and Ren and Stimpy was like how we like sort of helped fund that Spunko company to get Ren and Stimpy started at the time. And then Lady Death was like when he was working for ADV, and he talked about like all the cool stuff he wanted to do, and then he talked about like, yeah, and then that travesty of what you see of Lady Death happened because ADV people that were working on it didn't know what the heck they were freaking doing.
I've never seen Lady Death. Is it really bad?
I haven't seen it either. I don't know when we'll ever get to that, but probably one day.
Is it considered anime? I guess it's from ADV, but it's like, it's an American thing, right?
Or it looks very American.
I put that question out on Twitter, but it would just blow up my mentions. So, I mean, who knows? It's a cartoon.
Some people will say anime just means cartoon. And
it's animated. That's the abbreviation of it. Her dirt.
Yeah. Who knows? It's a fun thing to fight about online, I guess, but I don't lose much sleep over whether something's anime or not. I really just prefer if it's good. Which this film, Robotech the movie, it's not good. It's hard to find, obviously. I don't really recommend searching it out. Like if someone were to ask, should I watch this? Is this core to the Robotech experience? I think its lack of release is pretty telling.
I think the decision flow should go as, how long have you been awake? How long have you not been asleep? Okay, if it's this many days, it's Odin. If it's this many days, it's Robotech the movie. If it's past that, please seek real medical help.
Consult a doctor.
Yeah.
Doctor, even the animes didn't help. I tried every anime.
I tried every boring one out there. So are we ready for closing remarks?
I guess so. Do you have something prepared for them, or?
My biggest thing, well, I got a couple of big things, but I figured we want to like probably rant on that Kids Click TV program.
Okay. Yeah, let's talk about the disaster of their RoboCop airings.
Okay. Well, we have to lay it down. So.
Yeah, no, what's going on here? What?
Okay, Grant.
This is a new Saturday morning cartoon blog on this TV.
It's an every morning cartoon blog that started on July 1st or whatever. And it's supposed to like have all these great promo shows. One of them is a CGI like Sailor Moon tokusatsu show from France called Lady Miraculous Adventures of the Ladybug, which actually after seeing one episode, it actually wasn't that bad. But they got a bunch of like CGI travesties, like a an Angry Birds cartoon, a Pac-Man cartoon, and some
Max
other
Steel.
Weird. Oh, that the latest Max Steel. Yeah, that was
yeah the new
that
one.
Was a boring piece of garbage. But so they decided to air RoboCop Alpha Commando, which was like a late '90s syndicated RoboCop cartoon that John and I have actually been keeping up with. But when I say keeping up with, I mean if they can kind of keep putting out newer episodes instead of repeating the same episode 5, 6, 7, 8 times in a month.
So yeah, there are 40 episodes, but they've only aired so far 11 of them, even though the block has been on the air for about 40
days.
Are you sure it's not
like 15? It's been 11?
Well, there were 2 weeks where they were new, and then they randomly aired episode 13 one time. And that's all they've done, which is pretty pathetic, considering they've aired episode 1 like 8 times or something like that.
Yeah, so... Yeah, it's definitely a mess. Like, apparently Sonic X was supposed to be on this block, and then they pulled it at the last minute. So,
right, so
that
Sonic X showings are still listed as it's airing Sonic X,
yeah.
even though it's a month and a half in, and it hasn't aired, and it's been replaced by RoboCop on the schedule. But the actual schedule listing still shows Sonic X.
Yeah.
So it's just the block is a complete mess, and they're airing, you know, only a fraction of the episodes of the shows, and I think it's probably going to end up being pulled within a few weeks.
Said, you're saying this is a late '90s RoboCop cartoon? Because
yes.
I'm aware of one in the late '80s. I rented a VHS from Blockbuster one time that had a couple episodes on it. I didn't realize they'd done a more modern RoboCop.
I called RoboCop it that too. Cartoon. So
yeah, it's called Alpha Commando, and I think
Alpha Commando. Man, I've never even heard of that.
I didn't know about it either.
Yeah, I didn't know about it until it started airing. I don't know how they got their hands on it, or if they only have a handful of episodes, or what the deal is. But yeah, I mean they
Oh, his design. Oh, what?
I think this was to promote the Canadian TV movies or something like that. Or those were coming out in like the late '90s, early 2000s. So maybe it has to do with that. But it's very very different from the movies in that it's. RoboCop is always cracking jokes and
he's got some good one-liners.
Stuff and yeah,
like there was what was the one episode where he was doing the can-can dance when he was like hacked or something? Yeah, and then he's got some good one-liners like where some villain's like, "Why are you doing this?" He's like, "Cause I'm winning."
it is pretty funny, but it's just a shame that it's on such a stupid block. Like, why can't this be on Cartoon Network instead of 600 showings of Teen Titans Go or something?
So I've seen people a couple things. First off, when I accidentally said Robotech while talking about RoboCop, I got the idea that RoboCop piloting a Valkyrie is something I probably would watch. So just if anybody's listening out there that can make that happen, I mean, I would. I'm saying I would.
You know, Grant, I think it happened in the show, but we're not going to get to that point because it may not ever freaking air.
No. And again, the idea of RoboCop being funny is not an idea that's super crazy, because those films are obviously satire, but it's not satire in the sense that RoboCop's like, hurry, hurry, like cracking jokes and stuff. It's like, look at this absurd situation of this insane kind of, you know, what if we have literally robot cops running around just gunning people down instead of really giving due process. But then the other thing is, like, I keep seeing all this stuff on Twitter about Teen Titans, like, I don't have cable, so, but like Teen Titans Go, it's like Cartoon Network is playing like 400 episodes a day. Are people exaggerating, or is that really what's going on?
Well, last week they literally only aired two shows, which is Teen Titans Go and some new show they have called OKKO. And Teen Titans Go was, I think, 80% of the schedule. They aired it literally hundreds of times. And it's basically been that way for several months, maybe not to that extreme, but they basically just air Teen Titans Go and Gumball all day, every day. And they regularly preempt like new episodes of Justice League and Transformers, which air on Saturday mornings, just so that they can do another marathon of Teen Titans Go. And they basically just have just one or two shows that they air, and that's, you know, that's what a channel has become in 2017, because they just air what gets them the highest ratings, and they're like, hey, if this show is our most popular show, we're just going to air only this show. And, you know, it's a complete opposite of the way the channel was in the '90s, where you turn it on 30 minutes later, there's a new show on.
Right.
Almost an hour later. But, you know, they would never air literally 12 hours, 14 hours a day of just one single program, which is kind of crazy that it's come to that.
Yeah, that's strange. I mean, is it working for them? Do we have, like, numbers? Like, cause, I mean,
yeah,
that's
it does, sadly. It's like they do better than SpongeBob on Nick even now, so they've... I mean, kids, I guess, they never get tired of the show, even if they air the same episodes multiple times in a single day. You know, it's sort of nuts, but...
Oh, I mean, you would assume that that's part of, like, a dark ritual, a company airing 14-hour blocks of one show and repeating episodes. Like, that sounds like how you summon some eldritch beast from beyond. Like, play me 14 hours of Teen Titans Go, and I, Raul Guthaveth, will, you know, tear open reality and join you. But
I think there's actually a business model behind this, the way I understand it, in terms of, like, how television stations work, whereas when a show gets to, like, a certain number of episodes where they can run in syndication, which is either, like, I think it's, like, 65 or 85, that's when they start canceling the show off, because, like, they have enough there to have a programming block to keep making revenue without spending the money to make revenue on making more episodes for the show. So the Teen Titans Go, there's like 300 episodes out now. They have enough there to make the revenue on the company. So, like, they're not spending anything when, like, it's making bank for them right now. But it's going to come to a time where no one's going to watch that block anymore, because if that's all they're going to be freaking airing.
Yeah, that's...
So, yeah, I just looked it up. They have 187 episodes now of it, and they do still air new episodes. They aired 4 new episodes last week, which I guess was why they did the big marathon. But it's gotten to the point where they've obviously run out of ideas, and I think they said early on that they wanted to make only about 100 episodes, but now they keep doing, like, every year they do a Christmas episode and a Halloween episode. And it's like the same jokes every time, but this is like the number one rated show on the channel, so I guess they can't cancel it, so they just want to keep it going forever and make it be their entire channel. And they did bring back this week the original Teen Titans, but they only air it for 1 hour a day at 6 in the morning. I guess they realized, well, if Teen Titans Go does so well, we might as well give the original show a chance too, but...
Feels like kind of a troll, because I'm at least my understanding is for older fans especially, that Teen Titans cartoon is pretty well regarded.
Right.
People are pretty upset about Teen Titans Go being a comedy show and not a continuation of that.
The Teen Titans Go, there's all these incredibly angry fans of Young Justice and Teen Titans who are always ranting about how much they hate it. And it goes out of its way to mock these people. And, like, they did an episode where they just played 10 minutes of the original Teen Titans show with, like, gags written over it with the modern writing style, just to troll fans of the original show. And they did an episode where the Young Justice characters appeared in the show and they were telling them how stupid they were and that they're too serious and stuff like that. And so they're always having stuff like there'll be a nerd that'll come up to them, one of the characters, and start ranting about how much their show sucks, like, in the show. And so the show is fully aware of the fact that there's a massive amount of people who hate it. And they constantly riff on these people, which only makes them even more angry. So it's just like a cycle where they keep getting more and more pissed off at each other. And I don't know if kids even understand what's going on. If they're like, wait, I thought all my friends loved this show. Why are they always taking on haters? And so it's just a really weird situation. But,
but
there's a lot of people who hate it in the adult fandom. And I guess kids just can't get enough of it, no matter how many hours it airs.
You know, maybe it's maybe in some way it's a sort of a strange continuation of the same cycle, because I mean, I know when at least I was more kind of connected to those type fandoms at the time when like Justice League and Justice League Unlimited were airing, and I remember there was quite a bit of backlash at Teen Titans when it came out because the art style was slightly different. And it was not, people were kind of like, oh, this is for kids, you know, not like my other cartoons, which are for adults. Or, you know, it's just interesting to see that sort of carry through in some way.
But, yeah, when those came on, like, there was sort of a transitional phase where the DC animated universe, started by Batman the Animated Series, was still running because you still had, I think, Static Shock was maybe still on, and Justice League and Justice League Unlimited. And then they were starting to add in other shows like the Batman and Teen Titans, and those were more of an anime style of artwork. And so some of the people who like the Bruce Timm style with the very square shoulders and, yeah, I mean that, I like both styles, but some people only liked the older 90s style. And so they got really angry about the new style. But then now it's the case where people have all gotten over that because those shows were long gone. And now people are saying like, oh, those were the heyday of Cartoon Network when they had Teen Titans and the Batman. I've seen all these people celebrating that Teen Titans is back on the schedule this week. And you don't see anyone trashing it anymore like they did when it first came on. Right. And I wonder if in a few years people will be like, oh man, I missed Teen Titans Go. That was the really good stuff.
Yep. I mean, you know, and it's funny too, because I think about it now. I've even, one of my co-hosts is one of these people too, but I know other people as well that when Batman the Animated Series in season 4 transitioned to the style that we would know from, like, say, Justice League and Batman Beyond and Justice League Unlimited, where it was a little more
the new shiny. Batman Adventures season.
Right. The art style changed, and some people were like, nope, it's garbage now.
Yeah. So I know a lot of people hate that because it was, but I mean, I also heard that Bruce Timm said they were allowed to get away with more actually at Kids WB than at Fox Kids. So in some ways they were, you know, they were looser on the content that could be allowed there. And so in some ways that made the show better because they could get away with more. And then that led to what you get with Return of the Joker and Batman Beyond. There's some really dark stuff in there. So it kind of was like an evolution. It was not really, you know, not really destroying the show in my opinion, at least, but I understand that a lot of people like the early seasons more. And, you know, I remember the early seasons when they were first on, it was fantastic. You know, that was the best animated series that had ever aired at that point to me. but you know, they've made good stuff.
I'd still consider it the most important American animation. But I think probably if I had to peg it, because seeing these things happen sometimes in gaming with new editions of rules and stuff coming out too, probably the thing that's most egregious for people with the first Teen Titans and Young Justice when those first came out, my guess is it's not just the art style change, it's the double whammy of the fact that the old DCAU was done. So this was the new, right? It wasn't explicitly tied, whereas, you know, Batman and Batman Beyond and Justice League and Unlimited all kind of built on each other. The DCAU was such a great and wonderful thing. And then with these other two shows, it was basically like, oh, it's a different art style and it's no longer the DCAU that you've grown up with, for better or worse. So I'm sure that's where the majority of the backlash came from. But as we've just discussed, it all comes full circle and now those things are considered the golden days and, you know, all that sort of stuff.
Yeah. And, people would be mad because they started doing direct-to-video releases shortly after Justice League Unlimited ended.
Right.
And these were things that were originally supposed to be written as DCAU releases. Like, there was one that was going to be a film like Justice League Starcrossed, which was set in the DCAU in between JL and JLU. And then ended up being released as Crisis on Two Earths, but they changed it just slightly, just to make it not DCAU, seemingly just for the sake of screwing with the DCAU fans. They like changed John Stewart to Hal Jordan, made it be a different Green Lantern, a couple other really minor changes that were kind of unnecessary, and they could have just released it as a DCAU film, but they didn't. And then there was that Superman Brainiac Attacks movie that came out where it was basically DCAU designs, but the story didn't match up with the continuity of what had happened previously in the Superman animated series and the Justice League show. So people started to get really angry at DC around that time. But now people look back on the late 2000s, mid 2000s and say, well, at least it was not just Flash animation, 10-minute gag cartoons. And so now that seems relatively good. And so people aren't really as angry about that era as they were back at the time.
Yeah. Funny how things change.
Yeah.
I guess I can see people being upset. People can get upset about whatever they want. I don't really care. I don't lose sleep over it, but I can see people being upset because I guess Teen Titans Go is, whereas Teen Titans and Young Justice were at least more serious at times. I know Young Justice I've seen more of, and that was definitely a more serious pitch, but I guess the original Teen Titans had its serious arcs too, at least as far as I'm aware.
Right. So it got really serious in like the final season and they started to add more continuity. And, And then that kind of built up to what Young Justice became, which was long arcs and more serious plot lines and everything.
Mm-hmm.
And people probably forget the fact that they complain about the fact that the characters are all done in the sort of chibi style in the Teen Titans Go, but there were sequences like that in the Teen Titans original cartoon and in the comic book tie-in to it and everything, where they would get super deformed as well, because that was, you know, they were trying to be like anime, you know, I guess they saw Dragon Half or something, where characters randomly become chibi for 10 minutes or something, and so they would try to do that kind of thing, where they would have, you know, the characters get really big heads and really, you know, big anger marks on their foreheads and everything, and a lot of people at the time hated that, because they thought, they're just doing the same thing over and over, it's stupid, and it doesn't take any effort to draw that kind of art or something, and they need more realistic art. Yeah. You know, and now over time that's evolved into, I guess, these sort of simple flash. I mean, I don't know how much it costs to animate an episode of Teen Titans Go, but it must not be very much, because they reuse animation all the time, and I think the in-between cells are not hand-drawn anymore. It kind of just is, you put in a model and they kind of move on their own in certain frames and everything, and so
the computer does the rest.
Right. People can take like a screenshot and they can say like, look at this garbage. And it might not be as noticeable if you're watching it in motion, but with digital animation, that happens all the time, where people on Twitter will say, look, even with anime, you know, with Dragon Ball Super, people are always ranting about, you know, look at this in between still shot. And it's not as noticeable if you're watching it in real time, but people go out of their way to get angry about this stuff and go through every single frame to get slightly off model things to get mad about.
Yeah. I mean, I haven't watched any Teen Titans Go. I did tweet out an image of it one time because my nephew watches it pretty heavily. We were over at, my in-law's house and there was a part with them being little marionettes and sock puppets. And I made like a Thunderbolt Fantasy Season 2 joke. But other than that, I don't really have any experience with it. So I can't speak for its animation quality, but that sort of trend of like picking out in between frames and mocking them for being low quality, that doesn't really have much coin with me, I guess. Like that, I don't know. That's like zooming in on a painting and being like, oh, I can see the brush strokes. Like, well, I mean, of course you can. Like, there's going to be like, when this is, you know, you got to observe it as part of the full package. Like, what is it communicating to you? You know, as a viewer. Now, it can still have terrible in-between frames and still be a poorly animated show. It's not that it's mutually exclusive, but picking out things like that, you know, I think that's, I don't find it all that convincing of an argument that, you know, oh, the show is bad because I picked one frame and it's horrible.
Right. Yeah. And people did that a lot with Sailor Moon Crystal as well as Dragon Ball Super. Mm. And it seems like it's really common with toy stuff in particular. But I mean, they have to keep in mind that these shows are sort of aired unfinished, and then they get released on Blu-ray with better animation, and then released internationally with better animation. So, I mean, it is sort of unfortunate that they have the time constraints and budget constraints that they do, where, you know, episode 5 of Dragon Ball Super, where Goku is Super Saiyan 3 and he's fighting Beerus, you know, everybody criticized that when it came out very heavily, and it deserved some of it, but, I mean, people went so over the top with it, and that seems to be the kind of thing that happens, is they get an echo chamber where they just decide something is garbage just from a few screenshots that are taken out of context that you wouldn't normally notice. And so that's kind of the negative part of social media, is that it makes it really hard to enjoy anything because people are always nitpicking at stuff. And in the olden days, what was someone going to do? They were going to take a picture of their TV screen and then bring it to a convention and then rant about it. You know, it's not as easy to whip people up into a fury in the 90s about like a little minor animation mistake.
Oh man, that would have been a great panel at that time. I'm going to tell you why Batman the Animated Series is garbage based on this one Polaroid film that I paused on my VCR tape one Saturday morning, and look at this animation. It's terrible. You guys all suck. Read my fanfic.
Every panel should end with read my fanfic and you just slam the laptop down. No, I think modern social media makes it really easy to get in a frenzy, usually about something you probably don't even like experience. Like it's even I haven't watched any super yet. Yeah, like I haven't watched any super yet. I've seen all the stuff floating around about it. And I've ragged on Berserk, the modern Berserk, plenty, even though I haven't watched any of it. But there's a, I think there was a different sort of thing that would happen in the sort of pre-internet fandom or pre-social media fandom, at least. Like there would definitely be the sort of common wisdom of the group. And it wasn't like a frenzy, but it was just kind of like that was just known. Like for the longest time, people told me Zeta Gundam is the best thing.
Oh yeah.
And G Gundam is terrible. Like all the UC guys that I knew, like that's what they said. And I really liked G Gundam. Cool, I'd never seen Zeta, but I really liked G Gundam. And so I had like, I like kind of privately enjoyed it. Like I was like, I didn't tell other people that I liked it, but I really, really liked it. Because I was just afraid to bring it up because the common wisdom, quote unquote, was that, well, that's just bad. But so
you get the same thing is true with Double Zeta. There was just a taboo around it, sort of. And now people, I guess, a little more willing to like it openly now that it's been released here finally by Right Stuff. But, you know, there was this consensus that Zeta is the best thing ever. And then Double Zeta came out and it was the worst thing ever. Mm-hmm. And there's no room for any middle ground in terms of saying, well, maybe there are some funny episodes, and maybe some dramatic scenes do happen in it.
Yeah, how dare you argue with that? But, I mean, like, G Gundam is way more easier to get into and digest than, say, like, trying to get to Zeta Gundam, because then you have to watch the original Mobile Suit Gundam.
Mm-hmm.
Or you can do the compilation movies. You can probably watch the OVAs, too, but then you can also, in order to understand, like, why it led to Zeta Gundam and what happened in Zeta Gundam. Whereas G Gundam, you pick it up and it's freaking Mortal Kombat with robots. Like, you cannot go wrong with that.
Yeah, it's great. It's got a great opening theme and all that, too. That's a great wild ride. But I think it was, this certainly wasn't the frenzy that we have now where people are like, rah, 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 and just pile on and just, you know, get all the likes and the retweets. But there's definitely, there was more of a like, case closed, like, we're not going to reopen this old case file. Like, the show is bad. Let's not even address it. You know, there's probably still some of that frenzy around currently airing shows. I do recall, I didn't watch Wolf's Rain when it aired on Toonami, but I recall a lot of heated arguments over whether that show was any good or not between some of my friends, even though I didn't watch it at the time.
I saw the first two episodes when it first aired on, I think it was Adult Swim. Yeah, it was on Adult Swim, and like I just could not get into it. I couldn't care less.
I watched it late last year. I watched it all the way through. I skipped the like when everybody was sick, and there's just all these clip shows.
I think there are like four clip shows in a row or something.
Yeah, they're like back to back to back to back, and I was like, oh, okay, skip, 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 skip. But
I think Adult Swim might have skipped those as well, but I'm not sure.
Say I didn't watch it when it aired then, but I watched it last year, and I actually liked it. I mean, it's definitely a flawed work that it aims for a few things that it doesn't quite get. But I kind of dug it. Like, I dug the world and some of the thematics they were playing with. I mean, I couldn't sit down and explain to you right now what it was about, which is probably not the best thing for the show, but
yeah.
I liked it pretty well, actually.
That's honestly
how I kind of liked it, too. But it was not, you know, not the greatest thing ever, which a lot of people were hyping it up as at the time. And then a lot of people had the counter reaction of saying, oh, it's the worst thing ever, because it didn't live up to the hype.
Mm-hmm.
Their highest expectations they didn't live up to.
Yeah. And Witch Hunter Robin was another one that came out at the time where there was a lot of division.
I was just going to say that. Like, I taped Witch Hunter Robin in high school, and like I was just getting into it because I think I was just so hungry for something new. Mm. And that was like a really low period for me for like in terms of like Adult Swim anime. I was like, well, this is what's there and it's new. At least I can try it out. And I taped all these episodes, at least most of them. I think there was a period where I missed out on a week, and then I asked someone about it. He's like, dude, you didn't miss anything. And I was like, all right, fine. And I think I tried watching it like a few years ago, like the first two episodes, and I wanted to fall asleep. I was like, why? Why did I waste time recording this show?
You never know. When you're hungry for it and you'll watch anything, man, like literally anything will do.
Yeah, you'll literally eat the shit off the ground because you're that hungry for something.
Yeah, which I'm sure for some people, Robotech the movie may have been that for them.
Yeah, they were that hungry for anything Robotech. They'll take that pile of garbage. But Grant, what did you have for closing remarks, man?
I'm watching way too much right now, but I did want to say that here recently I've been watching Lupin Part 1. Lupin's a big gap for me. Like, I never was able to access it. I didn't have cable really when it was on. I've never really pursued it, but I started watching it here recently because Wave Motion, we're doing like a big Lupin month, and I tried to do my thing where I was like, what if I talk about how I haven't seen it? Nobody bought that, so I had to watch it. I tried to save myself some work because I'm watching too much already, but I'm about halfway through it now, and it's an experience. Green Jacket Lupin Part 1 is a lot of fun. I'm really loving it, and I just keep being shocked by how different it is. Like, it's such a product of its time. Stuff like, you know, the content matter being kind of this kooky Ocean's 11 James Bond heist thing, like, you know, the sort of heist genre, it'll percolate back up again every now and then and kind of go back away, but like, just kind of the heist thing and being kind of what everybody else was doing at the time is kind of interesting. Or even little things like Fujiko is in her late 20s or early 30s. I'm like, you can tell this isn't a modern anime because she's like an adult woman.
I know a lot of people criticize the early Lupin and say that he was, a rapist and that sort of thing. And so they tried to tone down his character with Part 2 and later to make him more heroic, I guess, even though he's still a thief.
Yeah, he's definitely, I'm not an expert on or any of that kind of stuff, so I don't want to definitively say like, oh, they're totally wrong or whatever, but he's definitely kind of a lecherous, like, gotta get the girls kind of guy. I don't know if it's, I mean, I've watched quite a fair amount of James Bond. He doesn't really strike me as being that, for the time that he came out, he was certain, I don't think Lupin is, and again, I could be wrong, but he's definitely within the bounds of what a lot of characters were in media in the late 60s and early 70s. Yeah. Let's just say that.
I think James Bond is a little more suave than Lupin is, but yeah. I mean,
people pretty much say, the same
like,
thing.
Lupin's very hairy, sweaty, kind of in the early stuff, and yeah. You got the big hairy palms and everything. And
yeah. But it's also funny too, because I was like, oh my god, hand-drawn cars, I haven't seen him in so long.
I saw only the first episode so far of Part 1, but it was very interesting to see the whole race going on and everything, mm-hmm. and
mm-hmm.
The levels of nudity they could get away with on TV back then, of course, is interesting. You know, you look at even kids' shows like the UC Gundams when they first aired, there's topless scenes of, I think, Faw and, well, I mean, just a lot of characters in them, and the scene where Benadryl has to take a bath with one of the Zanskar girls, not Benadryl, what's the name
Victory
of the character
Gundam,
from
man.
Victory? Yeah, no, I'm skipping all around, but, you know, that was in the early 90s, and they could get away with that, and I guess not until Ava that they really started to restrict what you could show on Japanese TV, but
yeah,
it's just interesting. You look back at what they could get away with then versus now, where there's more PTC kind of watch groups that are making sure that things don't go too far.
It's like,
and
holy
they
crap,
have to be aware of the international market and make sure that it can be aired in other countries too and everything now.
Yeah, now, you know, nudity is combated by add a solar flare in front of that nipple, and then when it comes out on DVD or Blu-ray, we'll really put it out there like what it was supposed to be shown.
Yeah, Part 4, they're airing it on Toonami, and it seems... You know, it seems very tame compared to the earlier stuff.
Yeah.
But I still do enjoy it. I mean, it has some very nice music and art, and, you know, I like it, but it's just very different from what you would get from, like, a really raw early, like, what was the original character supposed to be like when they first devised him?
Yeah.
It's interesting to look back at that kind of thing just to compare.
I'm honestly...
He's definitely more of a scoundrel in Part 1. He's not a lovable hero. He's kind of a scoundrel type character. And it's kind of enjoyable just that how episodic it is sometimes. I mean, again, one of the draws for anime and for a lot of Western fans since time immemorial has been, oh my god, an actual like long-running narrative. Like, we don't get this ever. You know, but as I'm watching this, and at the same time I'm watching like Gintama, which is, you know, multiple hundreds of episodes, and I've been watching the same story for a long time, and that's a little more episodic at times too, but it's just fun to watch a show where the premise of the episode is, you know, you're like a minute in and you get what the episode's about, and it's just totally different from the last episode, and we just, you know, whatever's having fun this week, you know, it's not a lot of lore to juggle.
Yeah, after you kind of graduate to long running shows with long plots, it can be nice to, you know, revisit the earlier days of how they used to do animation, where every episode was distinct and they had to come up with a premise that you could have a beginning, middle, and an end to it. Because sometimes when you have a long running show, it's not really as clever as it thinks it is.
Yes.
And it just improvises on a weekly basis. And it tries to make it seem like it all ties together at the end, even though the author didn't actually know what they were doing when it first started. and so it ends up with a whole bunch of plot holes. But if you have one episode, you have like a, you know, I guess a writer, and then there are people who look over it and say, okay, well, maybe here's the flaw in this with the plot hole. You can't really do that as much when the writer is supposed to be thinking about, oh, well, I'm going to explain this part 5 years later, and maybe I'll have come up with something by then, or maybe not.
Right. See, it's definitely that's a big enjoyment. You're just like, you know what? They're telling a story for 20 minutes. We'll see what happens. Doesn't really matter when or how or what. Let's just have some fun. So it's kind of nice. It's nice to return to. There's lots of, it's very old school, and it's some of the scenes are just infamous. They're so bizarre and weird. So it's great. I'm really enjoying it. It's a lot of fun. Good to revisit. I want to watch more. You know, so.
I guess for me, like, Lupin's always been a show that I've had such a hard time getting into. And even with the new Lupin on Toonami now, like, I mean, I've got like 3 weeks of episodes, like, recorded, and I just, like, I can't get myself to watch it or psych myself up to watch it. It's just like, I just can't flow with it. And, you know, I guess it's just kind of interesting to me how, like, you got people that do these Lupin panels and they wonder, like, well, why aren't you watching Lupin? It's such a great show, but it's not for everyone. And I can kind of see that, because, like, I guess episodic works for me, because you get suckered into, like, it ends on a cliffhanger. Well, I got to watch the next episode to see what happens. Whereas Lupin and everything is kind of contained. And, you know, for me, it's either you really dig it or you don't.
Yeah.
That was the problem I always had before. I mean, it's easy for me to do it when it's on a, you know, on a block like Toonami. And they did try to air Lupin again on Adult Swim in about 2006 or 2007, the last time. But then they lost the rights maybe a month or two into the airing. So they, or it had really bad ratings, so they pulled it. And I just could never, you know, I rented a few DVDs, but it's always like, you know, I'll check it out later when I feel like it. I don't feel like the need to rent the next one right after I return this one, you know?
Yeah.
And then I just never get back to it, because I end up checking out something that's more serialized, you know, and so I understand, like, why that can be a difficulty, but it can also be a strength if you can really get into it and enjoy the world that it is.
I mean, the only Lupin that I really like is the Castle Cagliostro movie. Like, I freaking love that film. And, I mean, when I say, like, and people ask me, oh, what's your favorite Miyazaki film? I go to that film, and it's not a Studio Ghibli film.
There are some other good ones too, like the Mamo movie. I think is pretty good.
Yeah, I've heard some other really good ones. I heard, I think, what was it, like the Babylon movie was supposed to be like not that good.
Some people don't like that one. Yeah,
yeah. There's so many TV specials on Lupin too. I think I saw one about like Walther P-38 or something like that. It had that in the title, and it was about some like arms dealer with like a secret military base under some mountain. And I remember catching on YouTube once, and I was like, well, this is all right. But, I mean,
Like one every year since the Liberty movie in, I think, 89.
Okay.
Yeah, so they produce them kind of like clockwork these days.
Yeah, it's like there's every year there's a Pokemon movie. You know, every year there's a Lupin movie. It's just a complete formula. But the early ones, they came out a little more apart from each other, you know, one every 5 years or something for the first three or four. So.
Right. Yeah, I think Lupin is one of those things that I'm not sure if you're even, I mean, I don't know, I'm 12 episodes into Lupin, maybe I shouldn't be making grand proclamations, but I definitely get the sense that episodes from whenever, and that's pretty much the Lupin experience. Like, I think that's maybe part of what makes it so enduring, is maybe it's not really meant to be marathoned, or like you're supposed to sit down and watch a whole seat. Like, you just kind of catch it when you catch it and enjoy it while you're watching it and move on with your life. Like, you don't, you're not like, what happens to these characters and like what emotional, you know, beats do they go through and all that. Like, they just, you know, they're always on a heist. They're always trying to get a job done. They're always trying to put something over on somebody, and you watch it for 20 minutes and, you know, go on and do something else.
Yeah. And they do try to add a little more of a character arcs over time with the part four, because they've got this whole plot with Lupin who got married, and the the woman that he got married to kind of likes him and wants to stay with him, but he wants to flirt with other women like Fujiko. And so they have that as like the season long plot. And that's interesting and all, but overall each episode is still basically standalone. And she doesn't, Lupin's wife doesn't show up in every episode. And the one that came out this week was with, focused on Zenigata. And a couple weeks ago there was one focused on Jigen. Probably before long there'll be one focused on Goemon. There was one focused on Fujiko. So it's kind of like you get a character study each week, which is interesting in its own way. And so it doesn't, not every episode advances the overall arc, but it is there. It's sort of like the first season of Ghost in the Shell standalone complex where there's a lot of single episodes that are just self-contained. But there's also going on in the background, the Laughing Man case.
Yeah.
So, you know, that's another show that was really divisive when it came out because a lot of people felt like it was too boring and political. But then there are people who really liked it and thought it really expanded on the world of Ghost in the Shell. And, you know, personally, I like it, but I understand why people would find it boring.
Yeah, there's definitely a lot of the criticisms I heard at the time. People are like, oh, it's just people in meetings. I'm like, well, no, but okay. You know, I mean
there is an episode where the major just sits in a chat room for 20 minutes, and so I get people would find that boring. But at the same time, it was kind of innovative for the time.
But then at the end, it was like, Major, are you driving? And she's like doing all this while she's driving at the same time, and then like I think Balto's with her, he's like, you're not in a chat room, are you? She's like, no, I'm fine.
Yeah.
I think that's a format that I dig, the kind of, it's episodic, but there's sort of a meta plot for the whole season. That's something that a lot of modern American shows do. I know a show my wife and I watched quite a bit of was, Burn Notice. And that was always kind of the thing, like, okay, well, every episode's kind of an A-Team MacGyver thing. They're helping some local do some job, but there's always the overarching, like, this season, we're trying to get this done. And then the season two, like, here's the overarching thread. While we do this episodic stuff, that's a nice way to kind of have your cake and eat it too.
Yeah. So,
if done well, I think it works. Like with anything, I don't think anything is like, oh, one is inherently better than the other. Like if it fits the narrative and fits the characters, you know, do it. So. Mm-hmm. Yes, that was my big thing. Been watching Lupin. I dig it.
I don't know if you had anything else you wanted to add for closing remarks.
I mean, other than, you know, just glad to be on and glad to still be podcasting after our 1 year birthday. Woohoo! We're still here. We haven't given up.
Cause I think, keep up that steam, man.
Yeah, I think most pods, I heard that they go out after about like 10 episodes or something like that.
Yeah, or they'll go on hiatus for 3 years without any notice. Anime 82. I don't know what happened to Regan Strongblood. Like, he just fell off the face of the planet. I don't know if he's dead or not. He could be. And then come back.
Do you want to get the plug for your website, or maybe you already mentioned it before I got on. I don't know.
You know, if you want to check out the writings, wavemotioncanon.com. I'm sure you guys know Wave Motion Canon if you're listening out, or you've at least heard of it. I'm not the only writer for that. We do lots of kind of editorials and stuff like that, and lots of translation work too. I think that's probably one of the things, even though I'm not involved in that at all, I think it's probably one of the biggest contributions the site makes just to kind of modern fandom, is that we have a lot of translations of interviews and things like that, which is something that otherwise, you know, wouldn't have access to, which is really nice. And that's just a great resource for all, you know, if we finally get to kind of peek over the fence, so to speak, and see what's going on. Blade Licking Thieves is my podcast. We do Eastern media, you know, so we talk everything from kaiju to anime to wuxia or anything like that. If you liked hearing me ramble on here, we do a fair amount of rambling on there, and we try to do a pretty solid analysis if we can, try to cover all the bases and really unpack these films. But, you know, those are the major two. But, and if you want to follow me on Twitter and see the absolute nonsense I post on there, I'm at Grant the Thief. You're certainly welcome to. You're welcome to join the party. I don't recommend it, but other people seem to like it, so.
I'm usually there. Cleaning up your mess. No, I'm kidding.
Yeah, right. Oh, Grant's at it again.
Oh, Grant puking all in the lawn. Gotta hose that off.
Being, you know, the mop in the bucket.
Yeah. I guess for me, like, I was a panelist at a local comic convention where my college town is at, which is Electric City Comic Con in Anderson, South Carolina. I did a panel on basically anime and print. and I have a box of, like, you know, anime print magazines I've collected over the years, imports and even domestic stuff. And I was going to bring the box with me, but then 10 minutes away, because that's about an hour from here, I realized I didn't bring anything, but I did have my flash drive, so I just kind of, like, talked about the PowerPoints I brought with me in terms of, like, hey, we had fanzines, and then it later led to, like, Animag and Animerica, and, you know, here's some of the import stuff that they talk over here, and then here's, like, the magazines in the UK. So I got it done within, like, 20 minutes or so. But having those visual aids really would have helped. But I had, like, a handful of people there, and then, like, later I did a panel on anime and time and space is how they listed. But it was basically, like, themed on anime that takes place in space. So, like, it was, like, the main Legion Matsumoto animes, Yamato, Harlock, and Galaxy Express.
My brand.
Yeah, I used Space Adventure Cobra. I used Galforce. I actually played the intro to Galactic Patrol Lensman. That's being
The show, or
because
I've only seen the movie, but I guess the show probably has a good intro. Well, or
Skaro Hunting Society is still fan subbing the show, I think. So, like, there's six episodes.
Another subs to the show.
Yeah, they've only done six episodes because, like, it's off the Laserdisc prints that they released, and the rest of it is coming from, like, home video recordings from, like, on TV at that time, and they're probably
that's a great group. They do a lot of obscure stuff.
Yeah, that's why I like them so much. And then, of course, like, I ended things off with my favorite anime in space with girls is Soul Bianca.
I've never seen Soul Bianca.
I freaking love it. Like, I'm my thing is, I had to actually message a friend of mine from high school, because, like, I first saw Soul Bianca through him because he taped it off of the Starz Network when they had anime, like, in the early 2000s. And I want to say for a fact that I saw it dubbed. The thing is, I can't find that dub released anywhere on, like, their eBay or whatever. It's always the subtitle version. So I don't know if the dub was just specifically made for the Starz Network to be on TV. Because it's, you know, A&N claims that there's a dub cast, and I feel like I remember watching it without reading subtitles, but there's no way to check on that at all. And my friend, I asked him about the tape, and he believes, sadly enough, that his mom probably threw it out, like, months ago.
Aww.
Yeah, so I'm like,
oh, that's the worst.
And, like, my only chance is, like, well, maybe I can message Matt Greenfield or get a hold of him, like, hey, can you please help me out? I want to know if this actually exists.
Is the show unlicensed these days? Or?
Oh, yeah, Soul Bianca. There's no one that had licensed Soul Bianca at all. Like, the ADV put out the first original two OVAs, the ones that came out in the 90s. And then the later ones in the 90s, which is Soul Bianca Legacy, was put out by Pioneer. There is no license for any of those Soul Bianca stuff out currently. And Soul Bianca is one of those anime that, like, there's really not a whole lot out there. There's no kind of art book that I'm aware of. I've got a couple animation cells, but that's about it. And, like, it's this freaking obsession I've had for, like, 15 years.
You're the only person I've ever heard mention it, because it's such an obscure OVA, but
exactly,
it's your favorite.
Yeah.
Bizarrely enough, we've been talking about it since we started this podcast under another name in 2011, and we still haven't reviewed it, which is
I haven't given it a proper review. I talked about it with Jeff Tibbetts, like, when we first started, like, 4 years ago, and, like, but it wasn't a solid review, so, like, yeah, that's something we need to do, and that's a broken record that I keep playing over and over. We mentioned something great. Yeah, we're going to talk about it eventually. That is my best promise to people. Other than that, I mean, the con was just like a basic convention. Another major thing that happened in my life was I made a decision to break things off with my fiance, so I'm single again. And I'm not going to devolve in too much information other than I know I made the right choice and I stand by it, because I saw eventually who she really was, and I didn't like how that was, and I can only do so much, and I feel like I tried my hardest, and I'm being accused of being the bad guy, or that I'm terrible, and then I'm getting, you know, she was blowing up my phone through, you know, Facebook and trying to call me, but, like, I feel like I said everything to her, and it's one of those, like, it's just a mess. And then she's got her mom trying to message me now, trying to, like, manipulate me to go back to them. I'm like, no, I'm solid on my choice. Because it just seems like the harder they try, the further they push me away. And yeah, so that's basically the gist of it. I feel like I've ranted about it so much, and I'm just like, I want to move on with my life. So
And that's tough. I mean, we talked a little bit about it before
I wanted to share that with you and, you know, like get some experience on it. And yeah. Go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to say that I don't know the specifics all that much, but I know one thing, I've been married coming up on 11 years now, you know, for my wife, I'm sure it feels like 1100 years because she's had to be married to me, but we've been married for a good long time and, seen plenty of other relationships that, you know, they got married and fell apart. And if there's one thing that I have seen that I can almost say definitely, it's that if people have problems, let me modify that statement. Everybody's got problems in any kind of relationship, no doubt. But if you have major sort of concerns or issues in a relationship, sometimes people think marriage will be the sort of magic wand that will cure it. Whereas a lot of times it just impacts it and makes it worse and people get bitter, they get upset, and then it falls apart too quick, or they turn to, you know, cheating or all this other outside stuff that just makes it all that much more complicated. So if you didn't like who she was before then, it was the right decision. It hurts less now than it would to, you know, be like, well, we'll try marriage and see if that fixes it. Because it doesn't fix things.
No, and like I've had like basically some good discernment. I you know, went to people for counsel on it and, you know, what to do. And I mean, I was in complete heavy prayer about it. I have complete peace over it. So then it's like, you know, I know I did the right thing. And, you know, and it just seems like the more the weekend goes on, the more they try. Like it's like the more I'm, you know, solid that like I did make the right choice. And for me, like, I think it was like, you know, I put a lot of my faith in like, you know, like thinking a relationship was always going to make me happy. And now it's just like, you know, because of my faith in God, it was kind of like it's kind of like his way of showing me like, you know, like you don't need that to be happy. It's just kind of trusting in him. And that's where I found like my total peace in. And I don't expect everyone to understand that, you know, because I don't know everyone's background on spirituality or Christianity or whatever. But this is like, you know, coming from me, and that's like where I want to be at right now is just focus on like, you know, focusing on my church, being so involved with it, and just kind of seeing where life takes me. And I've got, you know, growing up to do. I got to do also, and just focusing on school and stuff. So. And I guess my thing is, I always thought like, you know, I was engaged, and if I quit, I feel like I'm a failure. But that's not. You know, that's definitely not true now because I never got married. So like, you know, it's a whole lot easier to get out of it now than it is to try to be married. And
most definitely. Well, and it's good that you're cognizant of all that too, because it could be, you know.
Yeah.
You don't want to bottle things up, but you know, you're in a good place about it, and that's good.
Yeah.
You know, going forward.
And honestly, like, I'm just kind of like ready to be single and just kind of like, you know, focus on where I need to go, and I find complete peace in that. Like, I'm right now, it's like, you know, part of you is always like, it's nice to have someone, but that's not the main focus right now. That's far from it. And, you know, obviously, like, I need time before I turn a relationship, because I'm not even, you know, if they're freaking harassing me, they don't think it's over, but I do. So it's like, that needs to be dealt with eventually, you know, in its own way. But, yeah, it's a hard thing to do. Like, I know, like, it's always like, you know, guys stick it out no matter how tough it is. But, you know, I think it's, for me, it was like, well, I don't want to, you know, quit or whatever. But then I realized it's like, you know, I don't want to be miserable for the rest of my life. And,
right.
And if I can't change that person and they refuse to change deliberately and then want to lie about it, then, like, there's nothing I can do but to break it off. Because then you feel much peace, you know, better peace about it. You know, it's... You gotta say, you know, it's one of those, like, you know, kind of suck up your pride and do the right thing, at least for yourself. And, you know, there's plenty of women out there. You know, if it doesn't work out with one, there's more out there that you can pick from that'll treat you a whole lot better.
Yeah. And you definitely, you don't want to, you know, you have to make the best decision that's right for you in any relationship, and just not being in one is not a sign of failure or anything like that. You know, that's the right decision. That's the right place where you got to be. It's better to be in a bad relationship, or better to be in no relationship than a toxic one, right?
It took me a long time to realize that. So, so that's kind of where I'm at right now. So, and I mean, trying not to lose sleep over it. Or actually, I haven't been losing sleep over it. It was really hard, like, you know, thinking about everything and what I was going to do. And then I just made that decision. And I, it's to her, like, I laid everything out. Like, and I feel like I don't, they want to act like they don't understand what's going on, but then I said everything I needed to say. Like, if you freaking read my message. So, and I'm like, I can't change them. And that's when I'm like, I'm just, you know, moving on. So, and that's it. That's all I really got to say. So, that's all I'm going to say on this recording. Yeah. That's the important thing.
Yeah, it is sad to see this happen and everything, but, you know, you had to do it when you had to do it. And, I mean, it, ultimately it's your choice and they can't make you go back to it if you don't want to go back to it. So. Yeah.
And for me, it's like it's kind of like his response is like trying to guilt me to come back. But then again, I'm like, there's nothing there to go back to now. I've burnt that bridge for good intentions. And again, I stand by that. So, yeah, so I'm not going to, yeah, that's as deep as I'm going to get into that. That's on a need to know basis. That's about, I mean, like on this podcast, it's like you kind of share, you know, if you want to share part of your life on it. And I don't think there's anything wrong with it. Like, I don't feel like I gotta be, like, really that private about, you know, everything about me, but it depends on the person that's doing it. I'm not trying to accuse you of anything, of Grant or whatever, but, yeah. but I mean, like, I think it's okay to open and share, because if people have been listening to this since day one, and I say, like, oh, I was engaged, I was, you know, great, everything's going great, and then it's like, yeah, I broke it off, people are gonna be like, you know, what freaking happened? And it's like, well, right. Here's the long and short of it.
And because your fiance has been on the podcast when we did the review of the super fight.
Yeah, a couple years ago, yeah.
And then there was the one where you talked about when you got engaged, and then there was the one where you invited me to your wedding and all these things that happened. And,
yeah, that we've mentioned on here. People
have to know, like, what's going to happen if you've already explained what was happening before, and a lot of the time personal life is brought up during closing remarks.
Closing remarks is just throwing everything out on the table and talking about whatever.
Right.
So sometimes there's it's very personal things and
limits to closing remarks.
Yeah, it's just open mic time. So
we're here.
yeah, but it's like 11:30 my time, and I really need to get up and go to work in the morning. So I can't think of anything else I wanted to mention. It was basically the con, personal things in my life, and then. Talked about cartoon shows for a while, so
yeah.
Well, thanks so much for having me on, guys. I had a blast. It was great being on here.
Yeah, you're always welcome to come back if you want to be on for something, or if we feel like we should invite you on for something else. So.
Yeah, most definitely.
Oh, did you ever check out that Robotech fan podcast I told you about?
I still need to. I was listening to my own part of the thing we were hoping to do for our anniversary was to put together a sort of a best of clip or our favorite moments from the past year. So I spent the last couple of weeks listening to my own podcast a whole lot. Yeah. And so I'm clearing out my other backlog. But no, I definitely, the one you mentioned, I am super interested in listening to that pod. I've got it downloaded, but I haven't listened to it yet.
Yeah, it's just like this elitist, like, we can fix Robotech. We got to send letters to Harmony Gold and let them know we mean business. And this is like when the movie was like announced like a decade ago, because I was like, I like to go back to the older stuff and be like, okay, where did this start?
Wait, right. So is this a podcast that is devoted entirely to Robotech? Like,
yes. Yes.
I mean, it's one thing when you've got the One Piece of the Dragon Ball Z podcast where there's something new every week, but Robotech, there's been nothing new in 30 years other than a couple of like hastily put together compilation movies and stuff like that.
John, the way I understand it with this guy is the fact that like, he's got really poor iTunes ratings, so then you know it's good. So you're like, this is a dumpster fire that I want to see how bright it gets.
Get up close. How much of this really did you listen to? That smoke.
I've only listened to like one episode so far, but it was this guy talking about like the news announcements for Robotech, the movie, or like the Robotech movie.
The live action one that they're making?
Yeah, with Tobey Maguire like a decade ago. It's how deep this goes back. Wow. And then this guy apparently went on like a year hiatus or something. And then he's just like, I don't know what the new stuff is. It's just a gradual, like I'm getting listening to it, but I just want to hear how just crazy people talk.
Yeah. So I searched Robotech podcast and, we're actually the fifth result, AOIpodcast.com/tag/Robotech. But other than that, there's RoboSkullcast. Is that the name of this thing?
I think mine's Robotech Fan is the one I found.
Robotech Fan Pod is, or yeah, Robotech Fan is what I have.
Yeah.
Oh,
that's the one I told. That's the one I told Grant about. I'm like, dude, you gotta check this guy out. Yeah.
There's also one called Robotech World. There's like multiple different Robotech podcasts, which is interesting to me because it's such all a of those niche are thing.
All of those, I think, are under 3 stars on iTunes. John, The fact that I think we're 3.5 stars on iTunes and we beat out a Robotech podcast, I think we have some pretty good merits.
Yeah, but I definitely, it's in the download queue. I'm checking it out. I've got it ready to go.
I would love you to like rant on that on Twitter. I'm like, you guys need to check out this insane person.
I'll probably just lightly recommend, like, I recommend everyone check out this podcast.
If you want a good laugh for 2 hours, this is what, this will make your day or piss you off if you're Gerald Rathkolb.
And when you're a Robotech fan exclusively, you don't really like Macross. That already, for a lot of people, that already kind of sets off some warning lights.
I know. And for me, I'm like, oh, I'm rubbing my hands together. Please tell me more.
Do go on.
Do go on.
Oh.
All right.
Fun, well, guys. Thanks again.
I'm calling it a night. Thank you, Grant, for showing up. Thank you, listeners.
No problem.
So we'll see you next time.
Yeah.
Later.
All right. Stopping it now. The future is now.
That's Japanese. That's the one that's
Oh, I thought that wasn't English.
That's the big, well, it may have a version in English, but that's the one that's the big hit from Do You Remember Love? I think it was like came out, it was like number 7 on Japanese Billboard charts or something like that. Like, wait, it was a huge
Is that the same as Xiao Pai Long or whatever?
That's what it is. Xiao Pai Long. Yeah. That's a great song. That's a great, great song.
Nice. By the way, I've been recording this the whole time. Okay, I'm gonna
put it on there, I don't care.
Sucker!